Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death, from the Blake Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports and Death for the show, and it's another segment of Sports and Death, and we always open with a prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day, and we ask the Lord that you give us what we want and what we need, and you're what we need every hour, and we just take this time to say that all good and wonderful things come from you. More importantly, Lord, that your way be our way. We thank you for little things we so largely take for granted. And you're God all by yourself. In Jesus' name be Lord. Amen. Dr. Daly, Sports Up on the Blake, Better Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Up the Show. It's a Sunday edition. And we are here. The gang will all be here. Tim Smith, number one boxing writer of his generation, will join us, as well as the crew. Big fight last night, St. Patrick's Day, over at the Garden, and ironic that it was too, because we found out that we
hey,
had.
Doc.
Hello.
Hey,
Tim?
Doc. No, this
Tim?
Is Hoopster. Hey.
Okay, Hoopster. Okay, two things, Hoopster. Hang tight, and I will let you know what I want you. And so just lay chilly. I know you're excited.
Oh, can I say something to you?
No, you can't say nothing right now because I know you're going to tell me about the upsets. There is a hold tight. Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports and Death of the Show. Tim Smith will be joining us shortly, and we're going to talk a lot of boxing. Wow, over at MSG last night, the St. Patrick's Day, and McCracklin was doing a little cracking, but at the end, Dusty, he got cracked.
He certainly did. my Lord in heaven. I mean, Doc, the funny thing about it is that we were sitting there critical of Martinez, and he's blowing it. But I saw the film again last night when I left you folks. My leg was killing me, so I left early. I did my writing on the train. But when I got home, I said, let me replay this tape. And let me tell you something. Martinez was pock-blocking this guy, picking him apart. It didn't look that he was doing it, but he was picking him apart, laying some hilarious shots at him. And in the end, it worked out. I mean, he took this guy, what they were going to say about Macklin, he took this guy to deep waters, and he really hurt this guy. I mean, when he hit him in that first left hand that almost knocked him from one side of the ring to the other, that should have been a clue to us experts that Martinez was not to be denied. And
I don't think it was so much to be denied, but at that point, whatever his plan was, Mac was in the fight. I mean, it seemed to be more than anything else that Mac just ran out of gas, Dusty.
Yeah, because, Buddy McGregor, our dear friend, told us, he says, we're into Martinez, he sets traps and all that. We're not going to fall for the traps. And I saw that Macklin was not falling to the traps. Yeah, but in the meantime, typical hardcore European and bolstered by his pro-Irish crowd, he was in the fight giving Martinez a hard way to go. But indeed, I think now in retrospect, it was a trap because he was baiting him all the way till the end. And those two hard shots, I mean, you see how he went down like a log. I said, oh, my Lord, I thought this guy was stronger than this. Either that or Martinez is one of these guys that is dangerous from the first round to the last round, who could still knock you out in the later rounds.
It's no question that all that well and said, but I mean still, I mean he has a tendency, and Tim Smith will be joined. Tim, are you here yet? Okay, Tim is not joining. Tim Smith from the Daily News will be joining us shortly. Number one boxing matter generation. That's true, Dusty, but You know, I think this is Tim joining us now. We can't. Tim Smith?
Yes.
The legendary Tim
Mr.
Smith.
Tim Smith. How are we doing?
That, ladies and gentlemen, we are enhanced by the number one boxing writer of his generation and one of the just great human beings of all time, Tim Smith from New York Daily News. Tim, now, we're talking, Dusty. Is just saying that looking back at last night's fight, Martinez sort of maybe trapped Macklin. This is one of the things that Buddy McGirt said, that they wanted to stay out of the traps. But I'm saying, Tim, push come to shove. At the end of the eighth round, that's a close fight. Macklin is up. It seemed like to me, Tim, he just ran out of gas.
I think he ran out of gas, too. And I think that, and Martinez talked about this after the fight. It's just a matter of experience. Sometimes a guy doesn't know whether he has enough gas to make it to the finish line.
Right.
And so, he falls back into whatever he's comfortable doing, whatever he thinks is going to be successful, and as opposed to following the strategy all the way through, because he doesn't know how much gas he has left. You know, he's looking at four more rounds, and he maybe got two rounds in the tank, and he just falls back into a pattern of doing what he's comfortable doing and what's been successful for him in the past, which is, moving straight ahead and being aggressive and attacking, because he was landing, but he was also eating a lot of punches when he was trying to land. Buddy's strategy was the absolute right strategy, just, keep everything in the torso area and use the jab and, just sort of keep Martinez off balance as much as he could and try to win a decision. And if you looked at Julie Letterman's card, she actually had him up by 3 points, which to me was amazing. She actually had him up by 3 points, going into that 11th round. And had he been able to stay upright, even if he had lost the last two rounds, he would have won by a point on her scorecard.
Let me say this about that fight quickly, if I may. This is Mel Smith Jr., and I want to say hello to the panel. I have to say, watching that fight that you're speaking of, it's from my taste. Maybe it's just me. I think Martinez does have a tendency to get a little too cute at times, during the fight with all the baiting and the sticking out of the chin. I just think that there are times when he tries to outsmart himself sometimes. I think Martinez has a habit sometimes of getting a little too cute for his own good. I think that fight was way closer than it should have been, given the disparity in hand speed and skill level. So, he won the fight going away, but I just think that he could have made it a bit of an easier fight without all the clowning, quite frankly.
Well, that's his style. He fights like a bullfighter. He's from Argentina, man. He was a soccer player. He's a bicyclist, and he was a tennis pro. And if you look at him, he fights. He's a fighter. He's a boxer fighting like a soccer player, because that's what he does. And that's exactly what he does. He moves.
The dropping of the hands and the sticking out of the chin.
Yeah.
I just think at times he has a tendency to get a little too cute.
Doc, can I say something?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. This is what he does. And that makes him successful. Until somebody clocks him being cute, then he's going to fix it.
Well, it's funny that you should say that, because I think that may happen when he fights somebody, say, in the top five or so, the top three. I don't think he's going to be able to get away with these shenanigans that he pulled the other day. These stuff, the sticking out of his chin, the walking straight in with his hands down. I don't think he's going to be able to get away with that with a better fighter, quite honest with you.
Hold tight. Incidentally, we got Tim Smith with us. Lady A is in, the hoopster, and momentarily, probably the greatest amateur fight in history of boxing will join us shortly. Mark Breland will be joining us. So we got Mark and Tim. So the
special
Mark
Breland.
Mark will be joining us for a second. And continuing with Lady A, were you saying something?
Yeah, if I could just say something. One of the things that I found was interesting last night, and just hello to the panel. How you doing, Tim?
Very good, Lady A.
Hi,
Lady
A. Hey. How you guys doing? One of the quick things that I kept mentioning to Dusty was the left hand, the straight left hand was there for Martinez the whole night, but he just failed to, try to attempt to kind of set it up. Do you think that was all part of Buddy McGirt's strategy to avoid that straight left?
Well, I think that part of the strategy was to try to box. And I think that sort of, and Martinez even mentioned the fact that threw him off, because he didn't expect Macklin to come in and try to box with him. He thought he would be a guy that was going to be coming straight at him, and he thought it would be, you know, a much easier fight from that perspective, that he wouldn't have to look for him. And I think it was a good strategy to try to box. But I have to agree that, yeah, that left hand was there, and it was only later in the fight when Martinez was able to deploy the left hand, but that's because Macklin fell out of the strategy that Buddy had laid out for him.
Right. Do you think, Tim, this is the second fight where he doesn't really come around and explode until the latter half of the fight. Like in the 11th round against Barker, he had the same issue, and it wasn't until later in the 11th round in that fight as well that he was able to capitalize. Do you think this is something that he has going on now with European fighters, or it's just their style?
I just think that, you know, he really finds it very difficult to get motivated for these guys that they're putting him in the ring against, because he views himself in the same class as Floyd Mayweather and in the same class as Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, it's tough for a guy like that when he sees himself in that class and he's not in those mega fights and he's not matched up against guys that he thinks is equal to him. You know, I think it just sort of lulls him into just a really false sense of greatness, where he doesn't expend himself, you know, tremendously just to get these guys out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that mentally that sort of has gripped him in the last few fights or so, where, you know, it basically comes down to the later rounds where he actually gets motivated, and then he figures out that, hey, I gotta put these guys away. And, you know, even he won't admit that, but I think that's what's happening, is that he just finds it very, very hard to motivate himself to fight these guys that are putting him in again.
Back up. Mark Breland's with us. You know, one of the great champions, the greatest, every conceivable award at its highest level was ever won, greatest amateur champion ever, only lost one. Mark, now, yourself, Tim is saying, is there times where no matter what it is, if the guy is not in your caliber, psychologically, you just don't rise to the occasion?
Oh, no, not. Well, in my case, you know, if you're not in my caliber, I'm going to get you out of there as quick as I can.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you know, because as a fighter, you have to be, you know, you have to have that edge in you at all times to where, hey, you know, you got to be there at all times.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying, to piggyback on Mark Breland and what Tim Smith was saying. Martinez was motivated when he fought Paul Williams twice, and look what he did the second time around. He lowered him, he tricked him, he trapped him, and knocked him out cold. And
right.
I mean, this is Martinez's way of fighting, whether he fights Joe Canvasback or whether he fights a Pacquiao or Mayweather. That's the way he's going to fight. And he's going to come up with a full tool.
He was really cutting down
Macklin, and we didn't realize it until the 11th round.
Well, maybe there's two schools of thought here, Dusty. Macklin was a lot better than what we and he expected, and maybe Martinez is not as elite as we expect. I mean, Mark Breland just said something here. Get him out of there, because maybe the 7th round you twist your ankle. Maybe the 7th round he cuts you. So
Absolutely.
You know what? I mean, just Mark, last night watching the fight, how did you see it? Was Macklin in that fight? Did you see anything impressive about Martinez? Did you see?
No, nothing at all. I mean, he threw good punches, but at the same time, you know, don't get in there and lollygag and play around, you know, and just if you're going to take him out, just take him out. Don't have him hang around 4 or 5 rounds. If you can get him out of there, get him out of there. I don't think he had a problem at doing it. I just think he was trying to, my opinion, I think he was just trying to let the fight go as far as it can go for the fans. But, I mean, you know, the heck with the fans, I want to get you out of there.
Well, what about Buddy McGregor, the way he trained him and told him, don't fall into traps, just keep doing what you're doing. You hear him on the corner telling him, keep doing what you're doing, keep boxing him, don't fall into traps. So it makes it difficult for a guy who chucks and jives with anybody to be able to catch up to him. But he was catching up to him. He was busting him up. If you looked at his face at the end of the fight, the guy was sliced on both eyes. His nose was bleeding, and he was battered. And it was only about a time, like Tim Smith, he said he was running out of gas, and that's because Martinez fought him the way he fights all the time. And that's
Martinez,
basically what it is. Yes,
I think Martinez was just too fast.
Yeah.
I think he was just too fast for him at the same
yeah,
time.
Too much speed.
Yeah.
No, they say, and you fought that way, they say Martinez is an elite fighter. He's one of the best fighters in the world, pound for pound. Tim Smith just said, you know, maybe we can't put him in the Pacquiao Mayweather class. I think Mayweather's a class by himself. But is he one of the best fighters around today? Is he an elite fighter, Mark, in your opinion?
No, just style. Just, you know, he has a very awkward style. He just, you know, I guess with Paul Williams, you know, he caught Paul Williams. Okay. You know, you get lucky every now and then. I mean, Paul Williams has that style. Paul Williams has that style where, you know, hey, I'm coming at you. I'm 6'2". Why am I bending down at this man? That's how he got caught.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but if you got a guy, you know, I'm looking at Martinez last night. You got a guy who can jab and box and jab, he'll take him out of there.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now, Mark, you know, you're training fighters now. Looking around, the consensus is that Mayweather is the best fighter in the world, pound for pound. Is Mayweather the best? And if he is, how far is Pacquiao behind him?
It's very far. I mean, my thing is, you know, Floyd, he's undefeated. You know, he beat everybody that he's fought. And, I mean, Pacquiao has lost. But at the same time, you know, with the last fight with Marquez, you know, I mean, really, really showed a lot. I thought he lost that fight. I thought Pacquiao lost.
Right.
Tim, and I think we just got a female comic join us who will be back. Tim, and this is Lock Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Ritter Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Network for the show. It's a Sunday edition. Two legends. Mark Breland, greatest amateur fighter ever, and one of the great boxing champions of all time, Mr. Brooklyn, and the greatest boxing writer of the generation. Tim, and I'll get back to you to Mark. Tim, are we going to see Pacquiao, Mayweather, and we've discussed this, we're kind of saying no, and it's been our consensus that Bob Arum's a holdup. Are we going to see it, and why is Bob Arum holding this fight up?
You know what, I don't. The more time goes on, the less confident that I am that we're going to see it, because there continues to be obstacle after obstacle is placed in front of making this fight. First it was, you know, no drug test, and then it's okay, I'll agree with the drug test. Now they're going back to there won't be a 50-50 split, which was something that they agreed upon
the first time.
Mm-hmm. You know, they agreed upon 50-50 split the first time before the drug issue came up. So it's just, you know, you're cycling back around through a lot of things that are standing in the way of making it happen. But I just don't. I don't know if Bob wants the fight. I don't know if Bob Arum wants the fight to happen. I mean, the more that I get, you know, to reporting on this, you know, Bob was saying that they couldn't make the fight in May because he wanted to build this imaginary outdoor sports arena on the Las Vegas Strip that nobody had seen any plans for, or nobody had talked to any engineering firm about building the thing. So, you know, in his head, he was going to build this outdoor, you know, stadium that had to host the fight. I mean, it's just one excuse after the other, but I just don't think that he wants to see. I mean, you know, Bob knows boxing as well as anybody. He's been in the business for 40 years. He knows what a special talent that Floyd is. And he knows that Floyd is probably going to destroy Pacquiao, and that'll be the end of Pacquiao making any serious money in the ring. He almost lost. He did, in my estimation, I agree with Mark on this, he did lose to Marquez in that last fight.
Absolutely did.
And I thought, you know, and you could argue that he hasn't really ever beaten Marquez. You know, maybe the closest he came was that first fight that they ruled a draw.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Bob understands that, you know, that if Pacquiao loses to Mayweather, that's pretty much it. It's a wrap for Pacquiao. He can't, you know, he can't trot him out and make any money off of him, you know, as a pay-per-view attraction.
Tim, if I could just interject for a second, also you got to realize also that, I'm sorry, go ahead, Dusty.
Yeah, let me ask you a question on money. Isn't it now a foregone conclusion that the fact that Mayweather wants a 65-35 with he keeping the entire pay-per-view. And then he cost Pacquiao not the sharpest knife in the draw. If Pacquiao took that break, it would be that he is not the sharpest knife in the draw. Which guy, I mean, they're both, as far as I'm concerned, Pacquiao is number one, not Mayweather. And there should have been parity from the very beginning. But now he wants all of the money. Now, this is why they question Miguel Porto for taking almost the same breakdown. But Miguel Porto says, well, fighting Mayweather is not so much about the money, but fighting Mayweather, I'm making more money in one fight than I made in 10 years with Top Rank. My God.
Okay, Dusty, hold on. Okay, Mark, let me finish. Mark.
Yeah.
We talked about this last night. At this point, somewhere along the line, Pacquiao should say, it's not about the money, it's about being the champ. You know what, if he really wants this fight, let's do this, and in return match, I'll get the whole ball of wax, Mark.
Exactly. I mean, you know, they can make it a two fight or three fight as it goes, you know, depending on how it goes. And, you know, they both can make crazy money at the same time. But sitting around doing nothing, I mean, number one, Floyd, hey, I mean, he's the best right now. I mean, he's undefeated. Pacquiao's been beat, like I said before. I mean, hey, you got to beat the number one man. Pacquiao got a big, you know, he got a big fan base. Floyd has a big fan base, but Floyd's undefeated.
Right.
Tim, you know, we've discussed this back and forth, and Dusty and Harold. Okay, is Pacquiao the number one pay per view guy, or is Mayweather the number pay per view guy?
Well, I seem to recall that Mayweather De La Hoya has done the most pay per view numbers of any fight, you know, any boxing match ever on pay per view. And I don't ever recall Pacquiao being in an event that did over 2.5 million pay per view buys. So, I mean, you know, I wouldn't put him in the same class as Mayweather as a pay per view attraction. I think, you know, Mayweather wants to be in control of the promotion, and
yes.
I think that if he really wants to be in control of the promotion, then Pacquiao needs to come to him with a number and say, hey, my number is, if you want me to fight you, give me $60 million, and then I'll go out and bring my own sponsors to the fight, and whatever I get on my own, that'll be my pot, and whatever you get on your own, that'll be your pot. Then each guy at that point can have bragging rights about how popular they are. You know, if they're bringing their own sponsors to the fight, then who, you know, and they get to keep the money from their own sponsors or everything, what's the problem?
Well, Tim, let me ask you something. What about the article that came out in Bogg, and I have it written, quote, that Pacquiao told him, okay, we'll go May 5th, number one. Number two, it says, my promoter gave me the money that I want, and I'm satisfied. Now, Floyd, make sure that your promoter gives you what you want. And if it's not enough, if we'll put the whole pool together, then we'll go parity. And Floyd Mayweather went ape. He said, I'm not giving you parity. I get all of it plus my pay-per-view. So here, Pacquiao is trying to compensate him and tell him, yes, I got my package. You get yours. And if you don't have it, well, then we go parity. And he doesn't want to give him parity. He's going to mail him $20 million advance and then give him the balance after the fight, another $20 million. $40 million. And Mayweather wants 65% of the whole pack because he's number one? That's wrong. That's wrong. Dead wrong in my books. Because the man who has the 8 titles is Pacquiao, even though he doesn't draw flies, and Mayweather only has 7 titles. And Mayweather retired twice, and Pacquiao continued going on. So, I like to see this fight going on, but, I mean, don't tell me that because you're Mayweather, I got to take peanuts because I'm not going to do it.
It's not peanuts.
I mean, it is peanuts. I'm just as good as you.
The consensus here is now that Mayweather is the best fighter in the world. The other consensus
here is
No, he's not.
Don't tell me that.
Dusty, Tim Smith just said that. Mark Breeden just said that. I said, so there's four of us against you. That's the consensus, Dusty. that's the
no,
consensus.
No, that's consensus.
Here.
Nothing. That's the consensus number one.
The consensus here is that, well, I mean, Mayweather is Tim Smith. This is the best boxing writer of the generation of our time. Mark Breland, one of the greatest writers of all time. They say, they think, now, that's their opinion. And that's your opinion. But the consensus here, though, in my opinion, I think I got a little something here, in Lady A, we say 4-1, the guy's the best. We also say this is America, Dusty, so you can ask for anything you want. I mean, he's
okay,
crazy.
Now here's what I say, Doc.
Right.
I'm going to ask for $40 million and I'll fight. Give me the $40 million.
Listen, me and
Mark Breland will go in there. We'll dance to Pointer Sisters' video, and let's see if we get the $40 million.
Well, she had to bring the Pointer Sisters back up. Right here, too, a lot of this, Tim, and I'm asking Mark, is Mayweather wrong for asking for this?
No, I mean, it's a business thing. It's all business. And hey, look, they letting them do it. I mean, both of them. They're letting both of them running the show, but neither one of them want to fight each other yet. So now everything is business. They figure, the promoter's been killing them for years. Now they're trying to get theirs back.
Okay, now that's an interesting point that Harold Wilson talks about. Now, is there a question, Mark? Is there a question of heart? Maybe, I mean, Ray Leonard once said there comes a time that it's not about the money; it's about the title. Can we somewhat question Pacquiao's heart?
You know, I've been thinking about that because it's like, you know, now you're gonna fight. Who's he getting ready to fight again?
Well, he's going to fight Bradley.
He fought Mark Breland,
who should have been banned from boxing. He fought Cloudy.
He fought
everybody in his stable, and now they brought Bradley into his stable
Bradley,
for him to fight again.
Well, my thing is, you know, Bradley's no Floyd Mayweather. I mean, speed, nothing compares. I mean, why fight this guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not a tune-up.
Doc, I was gonna say, I kind of empathize with what Mark is saying, primarily because of the fact that it seems like it keeps every time they have this build up, like it is gonna go through. It's always some meeny miny thing as to why it all of a sudden it's not happening. So you have to question the validity of some of the things that are being thrown into the table as to why this isn't happening. I mean, it just seems like...
You were there when the PR guy from Top Rank, Dusty's ace buddy, and a great guy, you know, Lee Samuels, he told us that, he keeps telling us that after every fight, Mayweather tells Bob Arum, go make the fight. Now, I don't know if this is like custom model with Floyd Patterson when he knew Patterson could not beat Sonny Liston, and he kept coming back to Floyd and telling them they didn't want to make the fight. They always kept coming until it became inevitable. And now this is the same thing here. I mean, is Arum snowballing Pacquiao? Or like I said, you know, this comes a certain time. I think you got to question Pacquiao's heart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can question Pacquiao's heart. I think Pacquiao really wants to fight Floyd.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but it's the same thing as with Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto for years just left his career in the hands of Bob Arum.
Okay.
Absolutely. Whenever you would ask Cotto who he wanted to fight, he never called out anybody. He would always say, well, I'm going to let the company decide, and whoever they decide, that's who I'll fight. Pacquiao is the same thing. And this is probably why Oscar De La Hoya had a falling out with Bob, and this is why why Floyd Mayweather had a falling out with Bob.
Absolutely.
He did not want to put his hands in the – he did not want to put his career in the hands of Bob Arum in terms of deciding what fights he wanted to fight and how much money he was going to make. Now you have Miguel Cotto after 10 years. He's finally, you know, awakened. I mean, you know, he's damaged by, you know, fighting that cheater, Margarito, who Bob spent $1 million trying to defend. You know, but he spent 10 years of his career letting Bob decide how much he was going to get and who he was going to fight. Now he woke up and he's saying, hey, look, I got an opportunity to make more money than I have ever made with Bob in one fight fighting Floyd Mayweather. So, you know, you got to look at Manny's not in the driver's seat. in terms of who he can go out and fight and put a deal together. Floyd is in the driver's seat of his promotion company. He's driving everything with regard to what they, what sponsors that they bring in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Golden Boy is just a figurehead company. They're basically the people that put together the medicals, they put together the undercard, you know, they do all of the administrative stuff for Floyd. But Floyd's making the big decisions about money, about the splits and the purses and all that kind of stuff. Floyd and his people are doing that. So, you know, Floyd is looking at this as like a business kind of thing. Like, I'm making the money, so if you want to fight me, I'm going to decide how much you make, and I can pay you more money than you ever make. I mean, he's sounding a little bit like Don King in terms of a promoter, in terms of going out and getting guys. But you know what? He has finally stood up and done what boxers should have done a long time ago, which is take a greater interest in their careers and their financial futures with regards to how much money they make and how much they keep out of a promotion.
And also, Tim, if you look at it, it seems like a lot of the major fighters that Arum keeps setting Pacquiao up in are all Bob Arum fighters.
Well, yeah, of course, because he gets to keep everything in house.
Exactly. And that right there should be a hint at
any other promoter.
Correct. Correct. You know, keeps it all in the same family.
When he's negotiating a deal, I mean, he only has to negotiate with himself. He doesn't have to sit down with another promoter and decide what the fight is going to be in the promotion.
Exactly.
He's the promoter for both fighters, so he gets to keep everything in the promotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one of the things that would really kill him if he had to deal with Floyd, is sit there and watch Floyd take the lion's share of the promotional money.
Mm-hmm.
When he hears Floyd say, I don't want to split up the pay-per-view money because I'm the attraction, you think Bob Arum is going to be anxious to go in and make a deal for Pacquiao to fight Floyd in the promotion where Floyd gets to keep all the pay-per-view money? That would be insane for Bob to do that. And Bob would hate to have to swallow that for a guy that he basically promoted for like the first half of his career.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's almost insulting for him to have to do that. But, you know, he does. So he's going to have to like really swallow hard and, you know, sit down and want to make this fight. But there's nobody at this point that can force Bob into making this fight because Pacquiao doesn't have the power to do it. And I think when you guys were up at the Apollo for that press conference, it was Floyd who said, if Manny Pacquiao wasn't with Bob Arum, we could make this fight tomorrow.
Mm.
So there's a bit of a punitive side for Floyd as well. He wants to cut Arum out of the promotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny you said that. I remember the Hagler-Leonard fight, and in fact, that's when me and Ray first talked and found our friendship. And he said, you know, he wanted to do him and Hagler co-promotion, and the problem making that fight, Ray said, was that Hagler wanted to bring the Petronelli brothers in. You know, and he said, you know, hey, Marvin, let's just me and you do this. But is that's not going to happen, Tim, right?
That's not going to happen. But Pacquiao is tied up with Bob for I don't know how many more fights, I don't know how many more years, but he's not getting out of his contract with Bob. And if he tries, he's going to, you know, he's going to lose everything. He'll get sued and he'll lose everything. So, you know, so with that part in mind, that's why I say I don't see the fight happening ever now. I mean, I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
Well, when the contract ends, you probably will see what you saw with Miguel Cotto. I'm a free agent. He said it on Golpe a Golpe. I'm a free agent. I'm free to sign with anybody and every guy that I wanted to fight. Guess what? 1, 2, 3, May 5th, he's fighting Mayweather, who he must have wanted to fight for years but was denied. But now you see the round robin with a promoter allowing and permitting and forcing stablemates fight each other. And in my day, stablemates never fought each other. You have Pacquiao, Margarito, Joshua Clary, and Miguel Cotto. They all fought each other, wore each other out.
Mm-hmm.
And if Pacquiao was getting 20% of the purse and Miguel Cotto was getting 15% of the purse, that's 35% total for the fighters. And 65% went to who? Bob Arum, who got a hernia, carried that money to the bank. And that's exactly what's been happening. And,
yeah,
and that's the sad thing. This is why I'm so happy to see these guys break loose. And finally, because you said something, Tim, that is very key. When you ask about the post-fight interview, well, who do you want to fight next? Oh, mi empresa. They do the deciding. I'm only the fighter. I said, for God's sake, you're a human being. Who the heck do you want to fight next? they wouldn't say because they're trapped with that nonsense. Now,
Mark, was that your case, Mark? Was that your, I mean, you know, when you were made, was that your case that I mean, you couldn't decide, they brought, you know, I mean, the next opponent was already decided for you?
No, I mean, they, you know, it was a thing where, you know, it was like, well, you're going to fight so-and-so. I mean, I'm like, all right, whatever. But that's how they did. That's how they were doing it.
Yeah. Fighters can't decide. They can't understand contracts. They cannot see the small sign, I mean, the small lettering on the contract. They can't read. They got no brains. That's the stupidest profile I have to put on fighters. And I'm glad these guys broke off and doing their own. Canelo Alvarez is doing it. Marquez is doing it. Everybody's doing it. Pacquiao's doing it. Cotto's doing it. And I'm glad because they've embraced that slavery of these freaking guys.
Well, Pacquiao is still, he's still with him. He hasn't done it just
probably
yet.
Probably got a couple of years left.
Doc Stanley Sports up on the Blake Ritter, Nibbit Rainbow Soul Channel. Sports there for the show. They're all here. Legendary Mark Breland, Tim Smith, this Geno Baby Lewis, First Lady, the Hookster, with also Melkis. So, Mark, we talked about it last night. It was so good to see Michael Benton. Bernard Hopkins continue to fight, and one of the things is they say that, you know, he can continue to do this because the caliber of fighter out there is not as good in your day. How much substance is you know, the truth to that, in your opinion?
A whole lot. I mean, you got a guy, you know, who, you got a guy like Bernard. Don't get me wrong, Bernard's a tough fighter, a hell of a fighter, legend. You know, but the caliber of fighters that he's fighting, I mean, like the other guy threw him out the ring.
Yeah.
In his last fight, threw him off the ring. I'm like, come on now. These are the kind of guys they're fighting.
Mark, your feelings and thoughts. I mean, he's a stablemate, a friend, you know, and you know, some say Larry Holmes said, well, Evander, it's all right for Evander to still be out there because he stays in shape and there's nobody out there. But there are other people saying, Evander, you're going on too long. You're taking too many chances. Here's a guy that you know. What's your thoughts? I mean, we know why he keep going. Do you think Evander should kind of maybe let it go, Mark?
I mean, you know, I can't speak for him, but I mean, my thing at that age, I think it's time to give it up. You know, that's all I could say.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tim, we're looking at the same thing with Bernard, and we talked about it last night. And I think Mark said the things last night that he couldn't have done against an elite fighter. But you said a guy like Hopkins at this point is not going to fight Martinez because, you know, he won't do a catch weight. How much longer do you see Bernard going, Tim?
I see Bernard going until television network says we're not going to pay you any money to put you in here. That's how long I see Bernard going.
Oh no!
But didn't he tell his grandmother he was gonna fight no more?
He told his mother that, and she died like 4 years ago. He promised her that he wasn't gonna, before she died, that he was gonna quit fighting. That was like 6 years ago. So, you know, we see how much a promise to his dying mother meant. But you know, he used the excuse that you know, his mom would want to see him make money, and you know, what parent wouldn't want to see their child make money? So, you know, he got you on that. And what are you going to say? You know, your mom wants you to be broke. You know, your mother don't want you to be broke. Your mother wants you to make money. So, you know, but he'll keep going. Like I said, he'll keep going until somebody tell him, you know, we're not going to put you on the air. We're not going to write you a $2 million check.
Okay, last night, Marvin Lusso, what's next for him? I mean, I'm looking at things. You know, Pacquiao and Mayweather are tied up. You know, Paul Williams came back. I mean, is that a possibility? I mean, I mean, you're talking about Aram. Aram has Chavez. Is Aram going to throw Chavez to Martinez?
Well, if Chavez wants to hold on to that WBC title, he may end up having to get into the ring with Martinez. You know, they targeted him last night, but I don't think Aram, like I said, Aram knows boxing. He knows the limitations of fighters. He knows how good fighters are. And,
absolutely.
You know, he has a marketable Mexican star in Chavez. He's not going to put him in to a risky fight where he gets knocked off or embarrassed. I remember about 5 or 6 fights ago, some guy gave Chavez life and death down in Mexico, and they called it a draw. And they called it a draw.
Yes, they called it a draw, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They called it a draw, and a fight was clearly lost. But, you know, I mean, he's got the WBC behind him, and unless the WBC forces him or Lou DiBella can maneuver Martinez into a mandatory type situation. I don't see Chavez getting into the ring with Martinez anytime soon.
He may end up
fighting just for that vacant title against just another guy.
Hey Tim, are we gonna see Martinez go up 20-30 pounds? He was 181 pounds before. I mean, that's another issue with him too, his weight.
No. Lou was saying last night, because I think Larry Merchant had said on the air that he'd like to see him go up to 168 and fight Lucien Butte.
Mm-hmm.
But Lou was saying last night that that's not going to happen. And he's mm-hmm. probably right. He just doesn't have the frame really to go up and fight those guys at that size. Because when you think about it, the guy just, the guy came up from 154 pounds to come up to 160 to fight Pavlik and to fight Paul Williams. And he just did that a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And he's not, he doesn't have this humongous frame. He still is sort of a slight guy. So I can't see him going up to 168 and fighting a guy, fighting guys that are just real bangers and stuff.
So Tim, what's next for him? Are we is there a possibility we'll see him and Paul Williams? What's next on him? If Aaron's
No. My
fight.
Question wasn't that, Doc. Hold on. I was referring to Chavez.
Chavez.
Yeah, yeah. My question was, because my thing is the guy has, he got in the ring. He was after the weigh-in, he went up. He went up to 20, 23 pounds.
You were talking about Chavez going
right,
up to be
right.
Longer. No, Chavez is a very limited fight. You have to realize Chavez is very limited. He needs to stay at 160, even though he ballooned up. But, apparently he's got some other habits outside the ring that cause you to gain that kind of weight. But he's not really that interested in training. But
mm-hmm.
he can't fight. He can barely stand up to guys at 160 pounds throwing, real middleweight punches. He can't take that kind of pounding by going up to super middleweight or light heavyweight. You just can't do that.
You heard that, Dusty? We were talking about that last night. That's why.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, right now it seems like Chavez is going to stay at that particular weight that he's in now, and Bob is going to continue to bring him tomato cans. But the question is, if you put him against Martin, he gets a big payday, and you do a situation with a return clause. Tim and Mark and the panel here, I would rather get beat by the best and for a lot of money than to have some. Look what happened to Wama. Aram didn't make that fight with him, and it's amazing. He kept putting back out everybody. He didn't make the fight with him and Gamboa, and I think, Tim, for all intents and purposes, Wama Lopez is done. He's gone.
He got suspended.
Yeah,
I don't think he's a viable fighter anymore, Tim.
I don't know. There are guys. There are just certain guys, and Mark can speak to that. There are certain guys you just aren't going to be able to beat. And Toledo
absolutely.
Might just be that guy. Wama might be able to beat 9 other guys out there, but he might not be able to beat Toledo. So,
Toledo has his number.
Yeah, Toledo might just have his number, and it just could be the style that just throws him off. I would be very hesitant to toss him on the garbage heap right just yet.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd wait a couple more fights and have him get in the ring against somebody not named Toledo.
That reminds me of the story, the legendary Johnny Pacheco, the band leader down at the Village Gate one night. Hector Camacho came in, so everybody started talking about boxing. And Johnny Pacheco said, I used to box a little bit. He said, I fought this guy this night. He said, everything I did, I could do nothing with this guy. I could do nothing with this guy, he said. And so my friends told me, no, Johnny, relax. Next week, we'll get a guy your same size, your same weight, your same age, same height. Next week, we had the perfect guy for you, Johnny. So he trained for the fight. He said he walked into the ring, came up the steps, looked across the ring. It was the same guy. He said, hey, cut the gloves off.
I said, no, I quit.
Cut the gloves off. Mark Breland. Mark, you're training fighters now too, right?
Yeah, I'm working with Deontay Wilder right now. He's a 21-0, 21 knockout. He's doing much better than he was doing before. So hopefully, you know, things work out with him. But there's no heavyweights now, really. Seeing what's up with that.
You got another Brooklyn guy next week fighting, and it just seems that, you know, it all depends. He doesn't seem to have his head on straight. Zab Judah fights next week in Brooklyn, and he's kind of seemed to be a tragedy in a lot of people's minds. This talented guy that's kind of never seemed to fulfill his promise, Mark.
Well, I mean, you know, Zab's a good fighter, but he's never – Zab has very good reflex, very good power, good punching, you know, but – never was really taught how to box. And he don't really know the fundamentals.
Right.
So when he gets in trouble, he's messed up.
Oh, wow.
Wow, okay. Interesting. All right.
Mark, now, you know, a name in the past, you know, some of your stable buddies, how's Pernell and Meldrick Taylor doing?
It's doing good. Pernell's doing good. Meldrick's doing good. I talk to him off and on every now and then. But both of them doing real good so far.
Now, Pernell's become a trainer too himself, right?
Yeah, Pernell's a good trainer.
Isn't he crazy, Zab Judah?
He's more disciplined with his fighters than he was with himself.
Gang, let's take a break. We'll be right back in a minute. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Media Network. Rainbow Show, the channel, Sports Depth for the show. The panel's here. The group is here. Mark Breland and Tim Smith Jr., two living legends in this world of sweet science. Nobody make a move. Nobody say a word. Hang on. We'll be right back on Sports and Depth on the Blake Media Network. Rainbow Show, the channel. Sports and Depth is the show.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guests
you gotta go, Mark.
Are not necessarily the
run.
Views and opinions
okay.
of the Blaine Network.
Hold on, say goodbye. Hold on.
Okay.
Hey, Mark, how you
doing, man? Broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best.
Hello?
To Rainbow Soul.
Yes.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah.
Look, love having you. Got to join us again. Everybody say goodbye to Mark Breland.
Bye, Mark.
Mark, take care.
Take care.
Bye, Mark.
Yeah, same here. All right, y'all take care. Good talking with y'all.
Take care.
Love you, champ.
All right, peace.
We'll be right back after saying goodbye to Mark Breland. Hang on, gang.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Media Network, Rainbow Soda Channel Sports Network of the show. Lady A, the Hoopster, and Destino. We got the greatest boxing right of our time right here, Tim Smith. Lady A, I know you got a couple of questions. Let you start with them for Tim and Dusty and Sea Wings, who will join us,
yes,
also
sir.
The Hoopster. And John. But Lady A, Tim Smith, you got him. Go at him.
Oh, Tim, I know you heard about the upcoming fight with Kirkland. I just wanted to know, did you think that his last fight was good for a candidate of the year last year when he came back and beat El Perro Angulo?
Angulo, yeah.
El Perro Angulo, yeah.
Is there a minimum number of rounds that the fight has to go? for it to be considered fight of the year? Don't you have to have a fight?
Wow.
There was no fight. I think both guys have to participate for it to be fight of the year, man. He blew Angulo out. You know, I saw both of those guys fight separately on a card out in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I could see this coming and building, but that was like about 3 years ago before Kirkland went to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I thought had they fought like maybe the next fight after they were sort of like building them up on this card together, I thought had they fought at that time, that would have been a dynamite fight.
Uh-huh.
But I think, you know, with Angulo, you having the legal problems and trying to get into the country and, you know, having been off for a while and trying to get all of his, you know, his visa stuff straightened out, I think that might have taken some steam out of him.
Uh-huh.
And I think fans sort of just got cheated because
He wasn't the same guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, but Kirkland's performance obviously was eye
unbelievable.
He's just back to being just that vicious, you know, guy that you know, that Ann Wolf is you know, keeps locked in a cage down there in that little trailer in Texas. You know, but you know, it fight of the year. Like I said, I think you got to have a minimum, you know, number of rounds for it to be fight of the year. but it really was an eye opening performance. He may be back to where he needs to be, and you know, and if your boy Canelo can get past Shane Mosley, who has a vast amount of experience on him, if Canelo can get past Shane Mosley, I think Canelo and Kirkland would be a fantastic fight.
Exactly. That's a good match.
Berto and Ortiz are fighting again now coming up. What do you think about that fight? Because I know that last fight, it was a pretty good fight.
Yeah, the last fight was a pretty good fight. But you know what? I still got some questions about Ortiz.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that fight, Berto dropped him in the sixth round, and I could see, like, the resignation in Ortiz. He was, you hate to use the Q word, but I think he was just about getting ready to quit before he dropped Berto. And then when he dropped Berto, he was like, I might as well go ahead and try to win this thing. You
right.
know?
But they both got dropped, though. They both got dropped twice, though.
In that same round, Berto dropped him first in that round.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the resignation in his face, in Ortiz's face, and him saying, oh, my goodness, I think this thing is about over. And I think had Berto, like, pressed the case a little bit more, which he was trying to do, you know, had he pressed the issue a little bit more, maybe, you know, hurt him or something or dropped him again, I think the fight would have been over.
Right.
But, you know, Ortiz came back and dropped him, and then Ortiz was like, I might as well go ahead and try to win this thing now.
Mm.
Right.
But I think the second fight is going to be just as compelling as the first one, because I think that Ortiz, you know, wants to try to prove something coming off of that loss to Mayweather. And I just think that Berto has, like, a lot of anger built up from the way he lost that last fight. So this could be a great performance. You could see, you know, these guys bring the best out of each other the second time around.
I mean, it's definitely not the wars that Israel Vasquez and Rafael Marquez had, but I thought it was pretty much up there, the Ortiz fight, you know, and Berto fight. I mean, hopefully we'll see some fireworks.
I don't know if anybody should do to each other what Israel Vasquez and Rafael Marquez did.
Yeah,
and
I know.
They did it like three times. I mean, no one should ever do that to each other. And nor should you ever voluntarily, you know, decide that you want to get engaged in that kind of activity. That's horrible. I mean, they probably took 20 years off each other's lives. Man.
Oh man, of course you got to fight in the phone booth, man.
Oh no, that's not good. They're like 90-year-old men now. You know, they're like 90-year-old men now, man.
Of course, man.
Dusty, I know you got something, Tim.
Okay, and it's 5:50.
Rooney,
Dusty.
About 5 minutes.
Okay.
Dusty still thinks Pacquiao is the best fighter in the world.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he stands by it. You know,
I love a man who stands by his convictions, though.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes when the train is coming, you got to get out the way too, because you're gonna get run over. how? I mean, Pacquiao, you know, he's number two. Is he solid number two?
Yeah, I think he's a solid number two. I mean, you know, for my money, Juan Manuel Marquez is up there. He's probably 2A.
Really?
You know, I think you know, and I have to sort of agree a little bit with Breland, in the sense that I'm not sure that Martinez is, you know, number three pound for pound. I think sometimes the people that vote on that kind of stuff get enamored of a guy. They sort of read all the publicity and everything. But when you look at his body of work, I mean, you know, he's got two guys on his resume that he beat. And the first guy, Pavlik, that was a, you know, technically that was a really close fight that he didn't necessarily win that fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, he's his body of work consists of two guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul Williams and Kelly Pavlik. You know, so, you know, and then the Paul Williams decision was a controversial decision the first time. So, I mean, you know, I mean, so,
I don't know. I still think that Juan Manuel Marquez, you know, you look at his body of work and you look at the guys that he's been in the ring against, and arguably he's been in the ring against some really good guys, and he's given everybody everything they can handle except for Floyd Mayweather.
So Tim, do you think that Cotto has a shot then against Mayweather? Because I think he does.
Oh, absolutely. Cotto's got a shot against Mayweather. But with the Cotto that has a shot against Mayweather is the Cotto that fought Shane Mosley at the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
That Cotto has a shot against Floyd Mayweather. A Cotto that's going to box, going to try to keep Floyd at the end of the jab, you know, and going to try to stick to a plan of working a body and everything. And that's harder than it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may sound easy to try to hit Mayweather in the body because he's so fast, he's so quick.
Right.
I remember talking to Zab Judah about fighting Floyd, and Zab said that Floyd had the fastest feet of anybody he's ever been in the ring against. He said
really?
He could get himself into and out of position to throw shots faster than anybody that he's ever fought against. He said, you know, he would throw a shot, and when you get ready to counter, he'd be gone like a ghost. So that's the thing that is going to really give Miguel Cotto trouble, is being able just to try to land, you know. And nobody's been able to land, well, Shane Mosley landed a pretty clean shot against him. Marcus Corley landed a clean shot against him. And, you know, if you want to wind a tape back, you know, a long time ago, Jose Luis Castillo landed a couple of good clean shots against him. But it's very difficult to get a good, clean, hard shot on Mayweather because he's just never, you know, in position to get hit. But that being the case, though, Tim,
if he does, I mean, I think that he's definitely got that puncher's chance. I don't think that Floyd's ever, like you said, he's never really been hit hard several times.
You know, the best strategy that anybody had to sort of beat him, Oscar De La Hoya had the best strategy to beat him, but he couldn't stick to the jab.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar had a great game plan,
mm-hmm.
but he was so old, he wore out after like seven rounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point, Tim. A young De La Hoya wins that fight.
I don't know, but you know what? It's a great fight. It may be Shane Mosley all over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it may be a sped up version of Shane and Oscar. But it would be very close. You know, the Oscar De La Hoya, the version of Oscar De La Hoya that first fought Shane at welterweight. I think he gives Mayweather problems because of hand speed. You know, and quickness. But, you know, no, I haven't seen anybody mount an effective game plan against Floyd since Jose Luis Castillo, and then the most recent one was Oscar De La Hoya.
Which is basically
you use the jab as a platform for everything.
Mm-hmm. I got Dustin coming. He's got to run.
What about Floyd's game plan, gamesmanship? Of saying, I'm going to the commissioner and I'm going to ask them to authorize 8-ounce gloves because of the fact that I had trouble with Oscar when I fought 54-pound with Oscar, and I had trouble, so I want to ask them for 8-ounce gloves so I can improve my speed. If that's possible, I segue into the next question. If they allow that, well, then mega fights like this should be 15-rounders, man. But, I mean, is the commissioner going to say yes?
No, they are not going to allow Floyd to fight in 8-ounce gloves, not at that weight. They put that rule into effect for safety reasons.
Exactly.
And they put it in place for a reason, because you don't want guys that are 154 pounds hitting anybody with 8-ounce gloves. That's like just wrapping your hands in tape and nailing the guy. They don't want that. they do not want that to happen. I doubt. You know what? If the commission allows him to wear 8-ounce gloves in this fight, you will hear so many people. Well, I don't know if you will hear. You should hear so many people screaming, you know, bloody murder about him being allowed to do that. You should hear people screaming about that. I don't know that you will, because I don't know that people are up on that kind of. You know, that the people that write about the sport, I'm not sure that they are up on that kind of stuff as much as, you know, guys in the old days would be. They may be able to slip that one past a lot of guys. Obviously, they won't be able to slip it past, you know, people that are watching, but they may be able to slip that past a lot of guys.
Yeah, but isn't there a requirement at a certain weight they have to wear a certain ounce gloves.
Yeah.
Isn't it 147?
Yeah, it's above 147. If you're above welterweight, you're not supposed to wear 8 ounce gloves.
Well,
that's going to be interesting. That's going to be an interesting debate. You know, now here's the thing. The commission may, you know, say that, well, you know, Miguel Cotto has decided that he's willing to waive that stipulation, or we're willing to bend the rule, but the rule shouldn't be bent. The rule should be in place. That should be a hard, fast rule for the safety of the fighter, and it should not be ruled because somebody wants to make a fight.
I mean, I know that they could decide pretty much what brand the glove, whether it's Everlast, Grant, you know, Reyes. I mean, but once you talk about the ounces, that's a totally different thing. I mean,
that's a completely different thing.
I mean, Reyes. I would imagine that Floyd probably is more into, because Reyes a punches glove, that he'd be more into using, you know, Reyes, but on this fight. But I mean, now, of course, that's his decision. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, he's gonna probably find the glove that's gonna fit. He's got really bad hands, so he's gonna have to try to find gloves that are gonna fit his hands.
Now, is he still receiving cortisone injections for, like he was before, or?
You know what? Everybody keeps saying that's mm-hmm. the only reason that he fights in Nevada is because they allow him to get these injections in his hands or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, Rudy, stop that! Come on, he's still trying to
you know, do the best that he can with his hands. I'm not really sure of any of that stuff. That could just be rumors. I have no idea. I've never seen him take any injections in his hands. You know, I don't know whether that's true or not. So I'm not going to speak on that because I don't know whether
I always thought he fought out there because it's easy. The commute was easier.
yeah, he can roll out of bed, right?
Roll out of bed and he's there 5 minutes, right?
Well, that's also the most lucrative place for him to fight. I mean, you know, he's going to make top dollar out there. The MGM Grand is going to give him a certain percentage of everything that's sold in the house, merchandise, hot dogs, nachos, Coca-Cola's, beer. So, you know, he's got a pretty sweet deal. I don't know if he could go to Texas Stadium and have Jerry Jones cut him in on concessions and parking.
Really? So he even down to that, he negotiates on the contract? That's crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Everything that's sold to MGM Grand on fight night, Floyd gets a share of.
Are you serious, Tim?
Yeah. That's why when we were talking about before, that's why when we were talking about why he won't let Pacquiao have 50-for-50 of the promotion, that's why. Let me ask you this. If you're getting a cut of the hot dogs and the Cokes and the beer and the merchandise that's sold, and, you know, you're the one that's responsible for working that deal out and getting the money, do you want to share it with somebody else?
No.
I mean,
I had heard rumors, Tim, that he did. I didn't think it was him directly. I know that it was like his company, but you're telling me now that he directly is involved with that. That's something else.
Yeah, he's getting a cut of all of that. He gets a cut of all of the stuff that's sold at the MGM Grand on that night. When is the last time there's been a Floyd Mayweather fight at a venue other than the MGM Grand?
Mm.
Wow.
He's partnered in fights with them.
But Tim, so this thing of wanting to fight in the Garden, there's a possibility we'll never see Floyd Mayweather in Madison Square Garden.
Not unless the Garden goes into a deal where they're going to cut him in on concessions.
Or 50 Cent owns a piece of Garden.
Well, you know, and I doubt very seriously if the Garden would do this, but, you know, the Garden could rent the building out to him, but the Garden is always going to be in control of the concessions.
Right.
Wow.
You know, he wouldn't want to, if he rented out the building, did what they call a four-wall deal, he would want the concessions.
Wow. Yeah. Melt money there? Okay.
Yeah. He would want the concessions. So,
wow.
You know, the people around Florida are very smart. The business people he has around him are very, very smart. Very smart people. I mean, you know, these people are all about making money. And, you know, they've taught Floyd everything about making money.
Tim, you telling me that, you know what, I remember the first Leonard Durand fight, and when I went there, In fact, you know, got to talk about Doc Stanley Sports. This DocStanleySports.com. Man, Tim, maybe give me a plug too in your column. The DocStanleySports.com, my Hall of Fame collection, and one of the posters I have autographed by both Ray Leonard and Durant, and both Aaron King, was the poster. I saw the fight closed circuit for Montreal at Brooklyn College, and the guy said, you know, Ray had a percentage of every seat in the closed circuit setup. And Tim, you're telling me that Mayweather has this kind of control?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you, besides the pay-per-view money, his fingers are in every economic pie that's involved with the fight.
Is he the first boxer to have this kind of dominance?
He's probably the first boxer that can command it. I mean, I think people ask for it. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get it. You know, when Don had Tyson had similar deals, but Tyson wasn't getting the money. Don was getting the money. So Floyd's probably the first fighter that's getting, you know, a large share of the money, because Don is old school promotion. But you have to remember that Floyd owns his own promotion company.
Mm-hmm.
Mayweather Promotions banner. You know, and Golden Boy basically is just riding the coattails of Golden Boy Promotions. So basically what they're doing is when there's a promotional tour, then Golden Boy swings into action and get their people involved in putting the tour together.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are doing all the medicals and, you know, finding the matchmaking for the undercard fights and doing everything traditionally that a promoter would do. You know, handle the credentials or finding somebody to do the credentials and, you know, just all of the administrative work that goes, administrative paperwork that goes on with putting on a fight, they do that, you know. So, in effect, a promoter is supposed to take the risk, but because Floyd makes so much money, there's not a huge risk involved. So, you know, the risk would come, is the show going to make any money? Well, okay, Floyd's fighting. You know it's going to make money. Okay, well, then the other part is, how much money is it going to make? Is he going to be able to sell all the tickets? You know, is it going to generate 1 million pay-per-view buys? Is it going to generate 2 million pay-per-view buys? That's where the risk comes involved. I mean, that's the only risk involved, is if someone says, we'll guarantee you 50 cents on the dollar, you know, for every pay-per-view sold over 750,000, and then he may say, okay, give me 75 cents on every pay-per-view sold over $1 million. Okay, give me 85 cents on every pay-per-view sold over $1.5 million. You know, so that's when the money starts to click in. It's like, you know, the only risk is if he gives a guy a bigger guarantee, if he gives his opponent a bigger guarantee and he can't cover that based on what the promotion does. But he's not going to do that, you know, because he's never going to give a guy a bigger guarantee than what he's making.
Yeah, no question about that.
You know, and therein lies the risk that's why Pacquiao wants to be cut in on the revenue, because he realizes the extra revenue streams that are going to be involved, the different sponsorships that are coming on. He realizes that, and Bob realizes it too, is that Mayweather has his fingers in all the economic streams that are coming in to the fight, and he wants part of that money.
Is Mayweather being unfair in offering Pacquiao what he is and him taking the rest like that, Tim?
Well, he's being unfair from our perspective, but from a business perspective, you know, he knows that the fight is going to generate far more money than paying Pacquiao $40 million. You know, that's going to be a drop in the – well, it won't be a drop in the bucket. But, I mean, that's – let's say the fight generates $200 million,
mm-hmm.
and he has to pay Pacquiao a flat $40 million. He gets to keep $160 million.
Wow.
And Tim, you know, hindsight being 20/20, when you look at it from the outside, that would have been had he made that fight. But now that he's fighting Cotto, and then he's got to do his bid, I mean, you can't fault the guy for trying to make all he can before he goes in, you know? You can't.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not like he's going to be in there for a year.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be in there for like, you know, I mean, he's got 90 days. He'll probably
Yeah,
do,
but you know what? When you're incarcerated, anything can happen. So, you know, you never know, so.
Well, you're right. You never know. But do you think they're going to put Floyd in general population?
Well, I mean, like I said, you never know. Anything could happen,
you
know?
But let me just answer that question. You think they're going to put Floyd in general population?
Probably not, but, you know.
Okay. Do you think that there won't be five guards that will go out and get Floyd anything he wants at any hour of the day?
Well.
No, Tim, I don't agree with that. I think it'll be seven.
I mean, when you think about it, you know, anybody, when he goes in, other than the fact that he can't go home, I mean, you know, and he can't raid the refrigerator anytime he wants to or do whatever or, you know, exercise or whatever it is. Being in jail is not a luxury. But he will have as close to being free as anybody could imagine.
Right.
You know, that has to go and do jail time. It's not, he's not doing hard time.
Right.
I understand your premise.
He's
not going to be in the shower with rapists and murderers.
Right.
And pedophiles and, I mean,
Jeffrey Dahmer, the cannibal.
My man, Ellaby, Mel Smith Jr., Malcolm, Rooney, we've got the great Tim Smith here. We've been, you know, go at him what you want for questions. Go at him what you got. We got him. Go at him, Rooney. What do you want to ask him?
Hey, Tim, I just want to start off by saying that you are the absolutely unbelievable writer. Not only is your stuff factual, but extremely entertaining and compelling, Tim. Extremely entertaining and compelling.
I wish I could have my mom on the phone for that.
Hey, well, Tim, I have no problem telling the vast, much in depth universe that you are absolutely a must read. And now for that endorsement,
that.
You can get the
Rooney,
check in the mail.
Rooney, Rooney, give me my cut. But Rooney, I'm gonna tell you something. You know, and it's there, Tim. And you know, and we are immensely proud of you, as what you are as a writer, but also that you're a brother like no other. And Rooney, you know what? I've seen, you know, when Tim comes in, Mayweather, all the fighters come over and say, "Hey, man, thanks a lot." But you know the thing about you, Tim, and the bottom line is, man, you know, you. You are the best to do it, man. But like Ali, man, you treat everybody the same. There's no arrogance to you. No, there's no disdain to you, man. It's just a tremendous pleasure. And we want to thank you so much for being here. You've been here redundantly on this show. And,
hey,
you know,
before Tim goes, I have to ask him one question.
No, he's not going to play.
I don't want to be rude. I have just two questions that I would never forget myself if I didn't ask you. Number one. Who is your top heavyweight of all time, and who is your top fighter at any other weight?
Oh, my goodness.
Top heavyweight of all time? That's a tough question, you know, because I come at this from, like, a couple of different perspectives.
Right.
I come at it from a skill perspective, and I think if you're going to look at it from a skill perspective, you got to say Ali, because he did so many things that guys couldn't do. You know, at that weight class. I mean, he was so
like
fluid,
what?
He was
like
so
what?
Graceful.
Like what?
He moved around the ring. I mean, he moved so fluidly and so gracefully. You know, for a long time, everybody thought a heavyweight had to be like this plodding guy that, you know, moved forward and threw these thudding punches. And he was so quick. He could just like flick that jab, and you know, he could throw the jab. He could throw punches moving backwards. You know, like Ray Robinson. I mean, he was just a splendid guy to watch. And when you watch that footage of him, like, fighting anybody, the way he moved around the ring, and when they slowed it down, it was like watching ballet, man. It was just so beautiful to watch him move around the ring. But from a political standpoint, and just from, you know, just from being a man standpoint, you put Ali in this class as well, but Jack Johnson, I mean, what a man. I mean, you know, just at a time when they were just like lynching brothers. Here's this guy from Galveston, Texas, with like a, you know, a fur coat, driving around in like, you know, the best car, and just flaunting, you know, all of the prejudices of the time, and just like saying, "Here I am. What you gonna do about it?"
I mean, that's what, that was the embodiment of, like, the heavyweight champion is, like, the toughest guy. You know, it's like the old John O'Sullivan, I'll whip any man in the room kind of thing.
That's
you know,
right.
But Jack Johnson was the embodiment of just what it was to be, like, a man. And so, you know, I have two heavyweights that are just like my favorite. Ali for just the grace and style that he brought in the ring, and then Jack Johnson for just the embodiment of just what a man was. Not necessarily a black man, but just a man.
Wow.
And,
you know, Tim.
In the face of everything in the time that in the times that he lived.
There's two things that validate, not that you need validation, what you said. When they locked up Jack Johnson for that, excuse the expression, bullshit man act, you know, shows how America, they're always at us. Jack Johnson told him, I'll come in, okay, but don't nobody put handcuffs on me. The
right.
late Bill Shannon told this story of coming in the dressing room after Ali had knocked out Bob Foster, and he comes in, and remember Bill Shannon, he said, you know, Foster's sitting there like staring, and Shannon says, well, you know what, you probably won't need a few minutes to clear your head because Ali had T-coats. Bob said, no, my head is clear. What is blowing my mind, Foster said, is, and we're talking about the second Ali, as Marion Boykin says, you know, you all in trilogy, the first, the second, third, Marion B. Boykin, black Brazilian. Bob Foster said there are welterweights that his hands are faster. He couldn't believe the hand speed of Ali. He said, I couldn't believe a man that big had hands that fast, Tim.
Yeah.
Rooney?
You asked me outside of the heavyweight class, right? I mean, obviously the standard bearer is Sugar Ray Robinson.
Wow.
I mean, you know, just an incredible boxer. I mean, you know, I don't even have words to describe, you know, just watching him. Obviously I didn't see him live, but I mean, just watching the footage of him and just being able to box going backwards. And, you know, a lot of people always say, oh, you know, nobody, you can't win a round going backwards, you can't do this, you can't do that. But he did everything that conventional wisdom said you couldn't do, and he did it well, you know. And he was just a fantastic boxer. And, you know, we were talking about the business side of things, obviously toward the latter half of his life. I mean, it didn't end well financially for him. But he was like one of the first guys that sort of took control of the finances of his career in terms of fighting. So, you know, he had a sort of a self-determination once he got to a certain level, a sort of a financial self-determination that, you know, became sort of like the standard of what you would hope boxers would eventually carry forth. And then, you know, it didn't work out that way. It didn't work out well for him in the end, but he was, you know, one of the guys when he had the financial hammer, he wielded it.
Yeah, well, they said that he came, you know, his big problem was he entrusted people, and in turn, they turned out not to be reliable people, but they tell the story of him coming into a fight one night, and he called a promoter and he says, I heard this fight is being beamed to overseas. Ray said, it's going to cost you another $10,000, else I'm not going out there.
Right.
Hey, it's going to cost you another $10,000, else I'm not going. Rooney, you've got $10,000 Smith for yourself. Keep going.
You know, Tim, having interviewed many fighters myself, and I know you've interviewed everybody who's anybody and written about them and seen them up close and personal. But Tim, are they built differently, or I call them modern-day gladiators? Or do they have a different type of mentality, Tim, than most of us?
A different mentality in terms of what?
In regard to, you know, how they take their job, what they have to do, to have to physically dominate someone for a living.
Well, I think the modern day boxer is probably a little bit different in the sense that it's all financially driven, you know. And I had this discussion with Buddy McGirt the other day when we were talking about why the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight can't be made. It used to be a sense of pride, you know, for one guy saying, this guy seems to have skills just as good as mine. I want to fight him because I want to prove that I'm the best.
Let's do this.
Let's get in the ring. You know, we'll work out the money, or the money is the sort of secondary, you know. And maybe if the money was the way it is now, maybe that attitude would have changed. But it used to just be one guy wanting to see if he was better than the other guy. And now it's, you know, they measure their worth or their greatness by how much money they're actually going to make, how many pay-per-views they're going to do. And it's not necessary to get into ring the best versus the best. You know, it's you know, I'll take this guy because I can make money, and then I'll take this guy because I can make money, and then, you know, I'll worry about fighting the best at some other point. You know, and I think that's the biggest, that's probably the biggest difference, you know, that you see amongst the fighters today.
Well, Jim, if there was anybody that has the credentials to answer this question, it's you. The 8-0 question, Tim, and I have to hear it from you. Are champions born or are they made?
I think it's probably a mixture of both. I think that there is something inside guys that sort of compelled them to greatness. You know, because you have to make so many sacrifices and you have to have so much discipline and you have to, you know, have a certain amount of skill and you have to have a lot of God-given talent and ability that, you know, if you don't have if you don't necessarily have the physical attributes or the athleticism or the gifts, you're not going to be able to maximize what you have just simply because you train harder or you work harder, because you're always going to run into the guy in the ring that is just naturally better than you are and more naturally gifted than you are, no matter how hard you work. So
really,
I think
Tim?
Yes, I do. I think it's a combination of both. And you know what? I was trying to think of an example that I give you. I can't give you one off the top of my head, but let's just say, let's say Floyd Mayweather and
you gonna join us?
Let's say Floyd Mayweather and
join us.
And Shane Mosley. I mean, even though Shane was past his prime. But, I mean, you know, Shane does not have the same physical gifts as Floyd has, but Shane is a very hard worker. I don't think that there would have been very much that Shane would have been able to do, regardless of how much harder he trained, to be able to overcome the magnificent gifts that Floyd has. And, you know, to top it all off, Floyd trains like a maniac. So he's gifted and he works hard. So he's going to be better than most people that he gets into the ring, well, better than all the people that he gets into the ring with. And so it doesn't matter whether a guy, you know, trains hard or not. If he doesn't have a lot of natural talent, he's going to always run into a guy that, you know, that's just going to be slightly better than he is.
Hey, Tim, let me throw a quick name at you. And I can't wait to hear your assessment of this person. This is a guy that I think had solid boxing skills, but not great boxing skills, but overcame adversity with just loads and loads of heart and just plain doggedness and just the will of refusing to lose. What comes to your mind, Tim, when I say the name Matthew Saad Muhammad?
Wow.
Wow. Oh, man. Just incredible determination. As a matter of fact, I was talking to somebody about him recently, and I was saying I was always scared whenever he fought. I didn't know whether he was going to get killed or the other guy was going to get killed. But that's what sort of jumps into my mind is just that factor of something dangerously bad is going to happen because you know he was never going to quit. You know, he just had this incredible, this indomitable will, you know, to put himself in harm's way, you know, and just seek the ultimate outcome of success. And that's the thing that just sort of pops into my mind when you say that name.
And, Tim, every fight that he ever had was a Rocky movie.
It was a war. Every fight was a war. Every fight, you know.
Every single fight.
To me, it's almost impossible to make every fight a war. And Arturo Gatti made it, you know, I mean, he was as close as you could come to that version of Slot, you know.
I have to say,
I've never seen anybody with more incredible heart than him. I have never seen an athlete with such determination and just that I will not lose will.
You know what, Rooney, I remember he fought a guy named Yaki Lopez, and at this time we want to say hello. It's Women's Month, and in a minute we're going to just say a quick shout-out to Isha Mayfield, top comic around today. I remember he fought a guy named Yaki Lopez, Rooney, Lady A, Isha, Hoopta, and Yaki Lopez had beat Mike Rosman, who was taking a tune-up and got tuned out, and It got about to the 11th round, and Matthew said, who was getting hit from pillar to post, he TKO'd him about the 13th, 14th round. And when he interviewed Jackie Lopez, who was fresh as a daisy, the first thing he said was, "I just got tired of hitting him." "I just got tired of hitting him," he said. And Matthew said, I remember they had that Maps card at Madison Square Garden that didn't come off. Great card. Harold Swift out of Detroit had all the money in the world. Headline was going to be Jerry Cooney, who was the fight last night against Kenny Norton. The co-feature was the great Tommy Hearns against also legendary Wilfred Benitez. And for the first time ever, two Muslim brothers, they were never going to fight each other. Matthew Saad Muhammad against Eddie Mustafa Muhammad from Brooklyn. That was going to be the other co-main event, which never came up. Real quickly, though, we'll take a quick break. We've got, as a special guest, as you know, it's Women's Month. We're going to have in the ensuing weeks the First Lady of Boxing in New York City, Commissioner Melvina Leyland. But we've got Esha Mayfield. Esha, you want to say hello real quick there? Thank you for joining us. We've got Tim Smith and Lady A, the Hooster, and Mel Smith Jr. Esha, how you doing?
I'm good, Doc. How are you, man?
Okay. You were at the press conference the other day. Now, are you a boxing fan?
Of course I'm a boxing fan. My cousin's been boxing for years. Imamu Mayfield. He's a cruiserweight champion.
Say that one more time. Say it slow.
Imamu Mayfield. He's a cruiserweight champion. My cousin.
Tim, you heard
Brunswick.
Of him, I know.
Yeah, he's from
New Brunswick. That's Tim. Now you got any questions about boxing? You've been in comedy how long now?
I've been in comedy for about 2 years now professionally, but, you know, we're Mayfield, so comedy is our whole life.
Really? Really? Well, what got you started? Somebody told you to stand up and tell a joke, or somebody stole your bike and you didn't think it was funny? What happened? How did you get started?
I mean, to be honest, you know, growing up, all cousins, I was pretty much the middle child, so there was always everybody older than me. And you just get picked on. You didn't have a choice but to get picked on a daily basis and get roasted on. So I took all of that with me as an adult and realized, hey, somebody else needs to hear my story. Because the more I would tell people, they would laugh, and I didn't think it was funny. You know, like, why are you laughing at something that I really went through? And it happened to be a great fall for me. And, you know, we took it from there. Been all over the world so far, and we're taking it back to New York and New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Now you said you went out and you won a contest out in L.A.?
Yeah, down in Las Vegas. I won in a comic. They had a comic contest, and mm-hmm. I won second from around the world. Gordon Baker took first.
You won from around the world?
Yeah, it was all over from the whole United States.
So all of the USA and also like Europe and all that stuff too?
It was just in the United States. It was 5,000 contestants that they chose from.
Yeah, domestic, and, okay.
Yeah, and 100 of us that got to actually fly down and compete against each other.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I found out that one of the Sykes is a cousin of mine. Mel Sykes doesn't understand him. Listen, you got a boxing question you want to ask Tim Smith?
Your line is tremendous, yeah.
Yeah, listen, what's the real training like for a woman to actually get into boxing? Like, is it as competitive as it is with men?
Yeah, I think women are probably more competitive than men. But the training is very rigorous, you know. I mean, you got to do road work and, you know, you got to go to the gym. But I think that women probably dedicate themselves to the sport because they're seen, you know, they're viewed as not taken quite as seriously. There probably are fewer top flight, you know, women. I guess a lot of that's going to change now that women's boxing is in the Olympic Games in 2012. But, you know, I got a lot of respect for women. I really don't care that much for women boxing because I just don't like to see women hit each other. I got a lot of respect for what they do because they train just as hard and they work out just as hard. And
as far as not seeing the women hit each other, but I have to throw this in. You know, the first woman that I saw, I'm not talking about mixed martial arts, but I'm an actual boxing gym, that I saw
okay.
that could actually fight. I don't mean fight like a girl. I mean fight. It was Leila Ali. I went and saw some of her early workouts and early training. I'm like, she can't just fight. You know, usually as chauvinist men say, well, she can fight good for a girl. She fights well for but no, it wasn't just for a girl. She can fight.
Yeah,
okay.
No, she was fairly skilled. I mean, but, you know, when you think about it, I remember going to the gym when she was first working out and just looking at her hands. And, you know, she apparently she didn't have anybody that was, you know, doing well wrapping her hands. And she had, like, calluses on her knuckles. And I think she had been in the gym. She had been in the gym for like 6 months. And I was working at the New York Times at the time, and I wrote a story that ran on A1 of the Times. You know, on her getting involved in boxing, and you know, just basically what it had, you know, what the perception was that it had done to her father, the Parkinson's and everything, and her being involved in the sport. But she really dedicated herself. She was in the gym for at least a year before she fought for the first time. So she really took it seriously, and she really prepared herself to learn all the nuances of the sport, to get it down, you know, so that she wouldn't look like a Mia St. John and wouldn't, like, you know, make it like a mockery or anything, because she really wanted to be respected for being a boxer and for being a fighter, and not just for being, you know, a famous guy's daughter, you know, following in her father's footsteps.
Was that like a catch 22? She had to uphold the Ali name, and yet she had to make her own name.
Well, yeah, it's the worst kind of catch 22, because she's, you know, you're talking about one of the greatest fighters ever and one of the biggest, you know, personalities worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this incredible icon, this worldwide figure. So, yeah, I mean, it was a blessing and a curse. It opened a lot of doors, but then once you get those doors open and then people start coming into those doors and they're looking at you, you know, they're going to expect something along the lines of what your father did. You know, so she couldn't just be a scrub. She had to be very good. And so I think that's why she took her time and honed her skills so that, you know, she could come out. And, you know, Rooney was talking about not looking like a fighting like a girl. She had to look the part, and she had to be tough. But she had a lot of toughness about her. I mean, not she's dead or anything. She has a lot of toughness about her. You know, so she wasn't really a soft, like, feminine. I know they make her up, and she looks very beautiful and everything. But she had a really tough, you know, interior. She was made out of some really tough stuff. So
it reminds me,
she wasn't afraid to get her nose busted. So
no, she reminds me of Isaiah Thomas. They say Isaiah is smiling at you, but he's dunking and shooting jump shots over you at the same time.
Exactly.
And, they talked about, you know, you talked about that pressure. Natalie Cole, when she first got into the business, she did not use her last name, Cole. She used another name when she first got into the business because she didn't want to have favoritism or an unfair interest into the business because she was Nat King Cole's daughter. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's amazing.
That. Yeah, Doc, I gotta duck out, man.
Okay, everybody say goodbye to Tim Smith.
All right, Tim, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Tim, we love you, baby.
Keep up the good
work,
Tim.
Thank you,
man. Thanks,
man.
Right.
Now, Isha, you know, with you having a fighter in your family, was there ever any thoughts of you or the family pushing you toward boxing?
Nah, man, I don't fight. I try to stay away from fists.
Getting into the business, are there role models of people who you like in the business that kind of inspired you or you look up to?
Yeah, to be honest, Wanda Sykes is one of my favorites.
Favorite comedian.
You know, I found out 2 years ago that she's a cousin of mine.
I know, but you know what? I'm going to find out next year that we're probably cousins.
You know what? Listen, I'll do some research tonight. I'll tell you by next weekend. Why wait?
Just whatever you do, don't hold on to some black and white cheesy fighter pictures.
Hey, Rooney, deep down inside, she wants that picture, Rooney.
Yeah,
she
okay, whatever.
Hey, she wants the picture.
Oh, Doc. Hey, Doc, you know that you ain't gonna stand for it. Hey, Doc, if we really are related to Wanda, why don't you get her to play the garden? I'd love to see her in New York.
Yeah, exactly, right?
You know what? And Rooney, because we got Isha here. You've got to tell us a couple of funny WWF stories. You know, Last Family Sports Network on the Blake Rainbow Channel wasn't there for the show.
No.
We had Tim Smith with us. We've also had Mark Breland. Dusty he had to go on assignment, but we got Mel. And Hoopsa. You say Hoopsa? What's up, Hoopsa?
Right, I'm here.
Hey,
what's up, y'all?
Hey, what happened to Duke? Hoopsa, what happened to Duke?
My team's still in North Carolina.
Hoopsa, the floor is yours. Hoopsa, Campasa. What happened?
See, what are you talking about, Duke?
I'm talking about everybody that lost. Missouri lost, Duke lost. What happened, Hoopsa?
hey, this is second season. There's a whole new tournament. Everybody got to play hard. Go home. That's what happened to Duke. They wasn't making their shots. That's why they lost.
So now is Norfolk State that good?
No, Norfolk State's pretty good. They not fall asleep on them. They got a guy out here from Queens out here not far where I work at.
O'Reilly,
he's pretty good. You got to watch out for that kid.
Didn't Bobby Damage come from there, Norfolk State?
Yes, he did. Norfolk State, Milwaukee.
Now, what about Charles Oakley? He was from Virginia Union.
Virginia Union.
Okay. So now what's that? Now Missouri, Norfolk State. What happened with the Missouri game?
They was making their foul shots. That's why they lost. But they played no defense.
Who should you call?
They tried to play that zone. They got tore up. That's what happened.
Okay,
they ain't played man to man.
What happened with Dwight Howard? He changed his mind?
Dwight Howard? Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Also, they gave him the rights to make a decision on the GM and the coach.
Are you serious?
Yep, that's why he stayed.
Okay, now.
You got a lot of say-so over there, Doc.
Right, now he got a lot of say-so now.
But a lot of say-so, Rudy. That's all the say-so. A lot of say-so.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a superstar, Doc, and he knows it. And as Hope was saying, I mean, Dwight changed his mind about 10 times a day before he decided to leave.
But now, Rudy,
you know,
I heard that Magic Johnson, I know Magic suggested, but I don't know if the phone call was made. Hoopster, you got to tell me this. But Magic told him, you know what, ride the year out and stay in Orlando. Any truth to that, Hoopster?
I didn't hear anything like that, no.
No?
No, I didn't hear anything like
that. You did say, as others, Nate Baseball won't be with us today. He'll be back next week. You did say that D'Antoni was gone. So that was no surprise, right?
No surprise. They won't play for him.
But he wasn't, Hoopster, I mean, I never got the perception that he was actually ever really happy here or that he fit in.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you know what? I just never felt like in watching him, like, I don't know, maybe it's just me. I mean, Hoopster, I don't know. Maybe he never really fit in here. Like, I don't know. His system was never really...
Yeah, you're right. Yes, yeah, you're right, lady. Since they fit here in New York, it did not.
Yeah,
but Mike Woodson is doing pretty good, and plus he teaches defense. If they don't play no defense, he'll put them on the bench. He'll sit
Mel Cosell. I mean, Mel, you know, we've heard this before. The Yankees had a pitcher, couldn't adjust. What is it about New York that eats certain people up, Mel Cosell? What is it?
Well, Doc, us being members of the press. No, but seriously, really, a lot of, you know something? This is the big stage, Doc. Serious. I'm being serious. This is the big stage, Doc. I mean, if you're an actor, you know, and you make it here, I mean, this is, you know, outside of Hollywood, I mean, this is it. This is Broadway. This is the big stage, the big bash. A lot of folks can't take the heat here, the pressure.
But Rudy, he's a coach.
I understand that, guys. But you have to also understand. See, I think he was a bit inflexible in regard to his system, Doc. You know, his system was one of those, this is a system.
Rudy, hold on. So you're telling me that L.A. prepared Pat Riley?
Well,
nope.
Well, I haven't talked to Pat on a few occasions, as you know, and interviewed him.
Mm.
Pat thought it was showtime from the time he stepped on the planet Earth. I mean, Pat has an ego as big as Central Park to begin with, so he loves it anyway.
But see, that's why he fits in well in Miami, and he fits in well in Los Angeles. I just think that, you know, certain people fit well in certain systems. D'Antoni would fit in well in the West.
No place. Pat is like Phil Jackson. Pat's not going no place that the deck is not already stacked.
Right. Well, listen, I think that he would fit. I think D'Antoni would fit in better in the West. That's just me. Now, I mean, Hoopster, the Hoops guy. I mean, I played ball for a while, but Hoopster, I mean, I don't know if you disagree with me, but I think that he'd be better off or better suited in the West.
Yeah. Well, he ain't got no choice now.
I mean,
no,
I mean, it's always a choice, Doc. I mean, you know, but I'm just saying.
Slim and none. Slim's out of town.
Do you think that, Hoopster?
Yeah, you're right. I think he's better off West. And don't forget, he was in Phoenix. That's a small market than New York is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, Hoopster, first, Isha, Are you a basketball fan?
Of course I'm a basketball fan.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
I did start when Michael Jordan did, so I have to be honest. I was a Michael Jordan fan, and I stopped watching once that stack was over. I have to be honest.
Wow.
When Ewing lost his knee and he faded off his high-top fade, I stopped watching.
Really?
When I saw John Starks playing out in Manhattan, I stopped watching. It's like you were from
the great John
Starks. So Starks and Jordan, are your two guys?
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, my guy was Pippen. I loved Pippen.
I thought he was a
hell of a player. I like the underdogs.
You give me a break. DocSandySports.com. All the names he mentioned. John Stark. I got the sneakers that John Stark to make that Dunkin'. I got Scottie Pippen is in the Hall of Fame. As long as Michael Jordan only had two games in his career, he had a triple-double in the playoffs. I got both pair, with the last pair being given to me by none other than his like a brother, Charles Oakley. DocSandySports.com and the DocSandySports Dev Hall of Fame. Last night, got a chance to have a couple of gloves autographed. Jerry Cooney, Mark Breland, Michael Bent, former heavyweight champion of the world, Breland, the greatest amateur fighter of all time. Tony Danza was there, who actually was a fighter. He got the job at Taxi, where he went down to a gym and picked him up. Juan Laporte was there last night, but he's the first Puerto Rican to win the featherweight championship. But we had in the audience there last night, Junior Poison Jones, Buddy McGurk from Brentwood, Long Island, who happens to be welterweight champ. Some of the people who, and the other day I was going through, I saw a glove, I think I told you, and I saw Emmanuel Studio was there last night, and meant to say hello to him, and there was a name written right under his name, Angelo Dundee. And then I saw in the corner the future champ, Greg Page. Some of the stuff that's in the Sports and Depth Custom Guard Hall of Fame, DocSandySports.com. Hit that site, and anything you want, we've got there for you. More importantly, you know, I think so much as Steve Blazer, and we want to say hello to Rosie out in São Paulo, Brazil. And you know, it's the stories that go with them. And I was really, you know, I was amazed that I looked at a couple of gloves I had autographed, taken from actual fights by both Mike Weaver, former heavyweight champion of the world, and Michael Doe. DocSandySports.com, hit the site. Hey, anything and everything you got there. And I'm looking at a baseball that really blew my mind the other day.
How many baseballs? You got so many baseballs out there.
I know.
You got to catalog that stuff.
No, I am. Lady A came with me and said, Doc, I got to go. Gang.
Wait a minute, Doc.
No, I
cried. Doc, you were a bit too modest, all right?
She cried.
Lady A, you and I can attest, I haven't seen Doc Hall of Fame.
No, I cried.
That it is the most incredible array of sports artifacts, I don't know, maybe in the country, maybe.
Doc, didn't I tell you I had to leave? I was getting emotional.
She said, I got to miss you. I said, hey, Rooney, I told her, but what about the $20, you know, fee for this? She said, hey, shit, Doc, I viewed it. Doc Stanley, Sports Ever, the Blake, Rainbow Hotel, Sports Ever, the show. They're here. Mel Cosell, the first lady of sports, Lady A, the hoopster from Brownsville. And tonight, as we salute History Month, Female Month, Isha Mayfield, our comic. Isha Pippen, who I've got two pairs of sneakers, Jordan three pair, John Starks four. John Starks is just a
great
human being.
John Starks, Just,
I mean, you know, anytime I would call John at home, I would always say, hello, can I speak to John?
Hey, you know, hey, Doc, it's me. Who's it? Hey, Doc.
It's a great.
Hey, Doc, you know, the coach of Boston Celtics, the great Doc Rivers, was having a private conversation with him after the Knicks game. And he told, and this is one of those where John was just bombing threes. He told me, Doc, right off the bat, without any kind of fair start addiction. He said, Starks got more heart than anybody ever played with.
And
that team was Patrick Ewing and Oakley. He said, Starks got more heart than anybody ever played with.
Now, hold it. Not that they had less, but let me tell you something. It's funny you say that, because one of the autographs I have in my basketball is a great one from Doc Rivers. It says, from one Doc to another. Hey, but Lady A, what happened to his son in Duke?
Listen. I don't want to talk about it. I leave my other team there, though. My other team's there. My other team is there.
Who's your other team? All of a sudden, you got another team. Who's your other team?
Come on, all of a sudden, I got another team. I said that 2 weeks ago. I'm like, yo, my two teams are in it. I'm good. And I told you, y'all, straight up, I'm like, I got two basketball teams that,
Y'all are going to think I'm crazy, you know, but they're rivals, but they're both my teams. It's North Carolina and Duke. And they're rivals. They're rivals. I'm the only retard on the planet that loves the two teams that are rivals, and they fight each other all the time for the battle of supremacy in North Carolina.
Yeah, well, Duke took them too lightly. They took them too lightly.
But Hoopsa, but Hoopsa, now is the fault in the players or the coach in that?
The players. They play no defense. You can't blame Baczynski. No. They just took their team too lightly. That's what happened. They played no defense, and they tore them up.
Mel Cosell, I'm not buying it, Mel. I got to blame the coach somewhere here, too, Mel. He should have had it propelled, Mel.
Well, I kind of agree. Actually, you'll see both of them split down the middle because obviously the system that you're playing with and, you know, how much of a motivator you are as coach has something to do with it. But then again, by the same token, as Hoop say, hey, man, show some pride in your play. Show some dignity. I mean, let's try to get it done. You know, you can have the greatest coach in the world and the players not getting it done, and it can work the other way. You can have a somewhat mediocre coach at best, and the players just say, hey, we can do this. Let's go out and do it. So, you know, Rudy, you guys are tearing me apart like a Gumby. I'm like 50-50. I'm like 50-year. One
Rudy,
of the arms and legs and the other has the arms.
You hit on the money, Rooney. I was listening to an interview I was doing with Nassim Richardson, and he said, you know what? We could draw up the triangle play where I go to the top of the key and you pass me the ball. He said, if you don't have the talent, it don't work. So it's no
hey, yeah, Doc, that's like putting a great jockey. That's like putting Angel Cordero on a glue factory horse. They're not going anyplace.
Put him on Dusty's mule.
Yeah, hey, Doc. I mean, you're walking with people with drama, you know, poking around like Festus on Gunsmoke or something. I mean, you know, you're not going anywhere. I want to ask Isha a quick question.
Go ahead, Isha. Go ahead.
Quick question for you, Isha, is did you ever, when you were starting to become a comic, when you were first starting out, did you ever have any problem with, with the crowd? That I know when it comes to comedians can be kind of tough. How did you handle your initial fear, if any, you know, of the crowd, hecklers, you know, that old thing?
Yeah, the hecklers. That's true, the hecklers.
You know, thank God I didn't have any of those, but I had family members.
Really? Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, because like I said, the thing that got me into comedy was when I was a kid, my uncle, he had one eye and he has a couple missing fingers. And he'd always point at us and say, look me in my good eye, boy or girl. You know, and in my head I would always say, well, which eye? Of course he wouldn't say it out loud. But that's what really got me going, that,
Isha, you crazy.
Maybe there's a story here. No, but it's true. There's a story here. So, you know, he's good with it because, you know, he has a good heart. This is Imamu's father. His name is John. You know, he understands the comedy. But, you know, a lot of them, you know, my cousins aren't really feeling it. They don't like my act at all, but they don't pay
my
bills.
Why not?
Because it's about them. You know what I mean? If you want to get punched in the face, okay, and then go home and cook dinner and wait for him to get home, there's something to talk about, you know? Like, you shouldn't be doing anything stupid if you don't want to hear it on stage. That's all I say. Don't talk to me if you don't want to hear about it.
Mm.
That's crazy. Like, you know, little things happening, and, you know, I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to talk about it. I like the people like me.
Is it harder than, and Rooney Mel Cosell started this, is it harder for a female in comedy as opposed to a male?
Yes.
Why?
Yes. Yes. Because, you know, guys do this thing where they can talk like a black woman or a girl, period, right? And people find that funny. But, you know, girls, they have to work so much harder to, especially the way I take it, meaning I'm not all into, you know, talking about sex and degrading everything that a woman has to, you know, work up for. So, you know, to take on that route, it is hard. It's very hard because people expect a whole different way out of you as soon as you come out. So I think personally, if you're going to come out as a woman, just be personable. You know what I mean? Don't try the corny jokes. I mean, that doesn't work with people. People want to hear a real life story. We're in people where people are like dead broke right now. They're using Groupons just to come to my show. You know? So I want to make sure that they have the right experience.
Wow.
Wow. Who's going to win the NCAA?
That you, I'm sorry. Please go right
ahead. No, go ahead, Winnie.
Hey, if I throw a couple of quick names at you, tell me what first comes to mind. Realizing that, you know, obviously you're in the business and a great comedian in your own right. Lisa Lampanelli.
Oh no, this sounds dangerous. Jewish.
Okay. One more guy. I gotta find out about it. Boy, this guy cracks me. Paul Moon.
I'm sorry.
Paul Mooney.
Oh, for a moment I thought you were in stunned silence there. I'm not gonna say Paul Mooney. What do you think of his act?
You know, I actually like Paul Mooney. I do. I like him a lot. Yeah, I do. Because he has that real dry kind of comic humor where, like, you know what I mean? Like, you just don't really get it, but you get it.
How about the late George Carlin?
You know what? I haven't really followed Carlin, ashamed to say.
Carlin had a great line. He said, it's 70 degrees in the city, 45 degrees in suburbs, and 37 degrees at the airport. But who lives at the airport?
That's funny. Oh, shoot. Stupid.
How about Adele Givens?
You know what? In spite of what everyone is saying at the time, I actually like Adele. I like how raw she is.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, gang.
She got me up to Precious. I'm not going to lie. I can't watch any more of Monique.
Really?
Precious. Yeah.
Why?
Because it just became too much. Like, you know when somebody keeps screaming at you? I don't like when people scream at me. Like, you know, talk to me. And she got more breathier as things go. But she's one of my great. She paved the way for us to be here. So, you know, all due respect to her, I just.
Wow. So you're paying homage, but it's not your cup of tea.
Yeah, it's not my cup of tea. You know what I mean? My thing is, I like when people can, I don't know. Like I said, with Monique, you know, it turns out she's actually a really good friend of mine. Like, I know her personally. And she
really?
Thinks it's so funny. Cause we kind of go back and forth. She thinks it's funny because I don't think she's so funny. And she doesn't think I'm that funny. So that's what brings us to a mutual agreement that we can.
You don't think you're funny, but you're both great.
Exactly. It works out.
Only in America.
Wow. Felicia, we're going to love your comedy. Do you think the brand
really only
in
LA.
For the comedy? Are we going to see you in, you know, like movies or TV sitcoms? I mean, are we going to, if you have your druthers, would you want to branch into that, sitcom, TV, movies?
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm auditioning for a few big gigs as we speak that I'm really excited
really?
About. Y'all know, In Living Color's coming back out. And,
Living Color.
Yeah, they slammed me. So, you know, hopefully you'll be seeing some of my characters. I love improvising. That's one of my favorite things to do, and dress up as other characters.
Doc used to dress up as Homie the Clown all the time, so don't worry about it.
Wow,
yeah,
Lady A.
Shout out to Doc.
I heard you.
I don't say
Homie the Clown, don't leave out Homie the Killer Clown. Don't leave out.
Well, he's not carrying yellow balloons.
Yeah, remember? Yo, that was a funny show, man. I love that show.
Doc Kelly sports it up on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports it up the show in the closing moment. This is why these are the greatest collaboration of people you're going to meet. There's no subject that my panel can't kick about. We want to really thank so much Isha Mayfield as being our special guest as we salute Women's Month. You know, we'll probably bring you back next week. Also, we're going to bring the First Lady of Boxing, Melvina Lathan, our own First Lady. In fact, we're going to have Deidre Shuler come with us next week, the program director here. And, of course, we got the First Lady of Sports right here in Lady A. We're probably going to close in a couple of minutes. Leaving you with three thoughts. Live your life today as if it's 10 before part. Life goes to the urgent question is, what are you doing for the service of others? Is the room you pay for your space on earth? Those quotes, Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King, and from the Bible. Gang,
we doing a post, Stark, or are we doing a post?
Because we've got other show coming on at 7:30.
Oh,
we also want to salute. We want to say hi to Crystal Hart, who.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, Crystal's number one female sports reporter and the loveliest on cable television. Her father's not feeling well, so we want to say hello to her.
I hope he feels better, Crystal.
Yeah.
Her
in her prayers. As we look back, we want to say, you know, this is birthday month, the 20th of this month. It happens to be my granddaughter's and Spike Lee. That's why I remember Spike's. So happy birthday to Spike and my granddaughter Kayla. And we're going to hit some other birthdays for the month. Going back to last month, we remembered the birthdays of some prominent people. We thought Buddy McGirt was going to join us, but Buddy got a little tied up. Buddy had a great game plan last night, but I just think more so than anything else that his man ran out of gas. This Gino had to leave us. He was on assignment, so he'll be back next week. Gang, quick questions for Isha before we go. Lady A?
Yeah, I wanted to ask her, has there ever been a time she come up and felt like she had, like, stage fright? And in which town? In which town?
You know what? It was never stage fright. One, it was just, like, fear of getting up there. I know that sounds different, but, like, stage fright is, like, I'm afraid to get on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Fear was just, like, you know, not wanting to get booed. But, you know, my whole entire life, we had family functions, and we would have to do, you know, go up there and do an act or something. I never did it. Like, I never had anything prepared. So I would just go up there and make it up. And when I was 7 years old, I sung a song that said, if anybody knew my name, I would be dangerous. And my aunts remind me of that daily. So just to keep pushing. Exactly. So I was like, listen, if I can do this, I really can do anything. And, you know, not to mention the doctors are telling me I need therapy. I'm like, who needs therapy when you can just talk to people for free?
Right.
Really?
I just want to thank Misha for coming on the show, Doc, and giving us the tape. I happen to know that you dabble in comedy in your own right. I've been lucky enough to catch your act. You're very modest because I remember leaving your show still laughing, and so was the audience. So I know you, of all people, can truly respect what Isha done was you've actually been there and done that. And I have to say, Isha, after seeing, you know, how you comics handle the crowd and what you go through and how you deal with them, I want to say good luck and I have nothing but respect for what you do.
Thank you.
Oh, Isha, one more question. Have you ever had one of those hecklers that was just like a real pain you had to tell them off?
Yeah, you know what? That actually happened to Elizabeth last Thursday at Las Palmas. Yeah.
That's
one of those... It always happens at a Dominican spot. You know, the Cubans and the Dominicans, you know.
Hey, what happened to my people? What happened
to
my people? Tell me. What happened to my people?
Well, you know, they coat their life jackets, you know, so it got crazy. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the guy's drinking a little bit too much, and, you know, everybody wants to be a comedian, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, he's kind of like, he says stupid jokes like, you know, Jose, can you see? We know that. But it just makes so bad that his name is Jose. But, you know, I'll say a joke, right? I'm up there. I'm doing my thing. He's like, so Isha, that's your name, right? Isha? You know, so he's trying to calm down. Yeah, so that's my name, Isha. Well, Isha, you like arroz? I'm black. I don't know what arroz means. So I asked the audience, what does arroz mean? They're like, rice. I'm like, yes, I like rice, sir. But then they get to the point where it gets too much because they're interrupting. You can't really follow your set. So you're asking to leave.
They get to the point that they throw off your timing. You know,
yeah, exactly.
You can bring
everything
them in
time
and take them out, but they get to the point that they throw off your timing and they're
no
starting to mess with the show. Hoopster,
well, when I
saw
you talk, you had total control over the crowd. You did a real, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, I'm speaking to you, but you did a real nice job handling the crowd, Doc.
Well, thank,
very nice.
Well, Rooney,
so
you know what helped was that they knew I had a gun. Thanks so much, Rooney. Hoopster, question for Isha.
Yes, I want to know who she'd like to work with in the near future of the comics. She had a choice.
Actually, Kevin Hart. We're actually about to put something together coming into
life. Oh, he's hilarious, that guy.
He's actually my mentor. I've been under him since 2 years ago when we started his tour out in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm doing his tour May 25th in Atlantic City. So he's been bringing me up, and, you know, we're actually doing the show together in July, so we're really excited about it. But that's my most of what I cannot wait for.
You know what the funniest thing he does is? Like what we do is just like, he said, you know, when people go, he said, when brothers and sisters get angry, they start clapping their hands.
Lady A, let Larry close, and we'll get a quick minute to. Don't nobody move. Larry Hardison, please.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Go ahead, Lady A. Talk to her till we cut off. Go ahead.
Oh, Isha, that's hilarious. That was when he did that on stand up, I was cracking up. Listen,
yeah,
my brother,
exactly.
I will bust your behind. Do not step to me.
do not step to me. Okay?
He's a funny guy out there so far. Plus, he got a movie coming out, too, with Steve Harvey's on book. That should be very good.
What's he have?
But he's going to be
Sports Network, Rainbow Stones, here on Sports Network Show. We'll be back next week. Isha, thanks for being with us. The Hoopster,
thanks,
the First Lady of Sports, Lady A, and Mel Cosell. From the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. Rooney?
Yeah, still there, Doc.
Yeah. They did give us a couple of extra minutes, I guess, to kill here.
Who's on, Doc? Is our panel still with us?
No, she left, but we got a couple of few extra minutes here.
I did catch your acting, man. He did really do a really nice job, Doc, controlling the crowd, getting laughs. I heard something, Doc. I don't know if it was Chris Rock or something say that he's his actor's time to get a laugh like every 30 seconds or 45 seconds or
it's
or
funny
a minute
you
or
say
something
that,
like that.
First time I saw Chris Rock, I was doing the legendary Cotton Club, and Chris Rock and Gregory... No, it wasn't Chris Rock. It was Spike Lee and Gregory Hines were in the audience.
Oh, my God. That guy's like my man, Gregory Hines.
It was just really amazing.
Well, there goes our minute that we had. Anybody else left? I guess we were all gone.
Yeah, I remember that show. I was doing a gig.
Oh, that's it. Okay, Doc.
It was Chris, Spike Lee, and Gregory Hines. And Gregory is he's no longer with us. You know, Gregory.
Yeah, I know. Him and his brother. Hines is great dancer.
You know, like you people are like you know, you're off the charts. You know, whatever I throw at you, you jump on. I mean, I got a comic, and you're throwing names at her, and then Tim Smith would have been with us for 20 minutes. He stayed with us during the 2 hours.
I'm not surprised, Doc. And Tim is actually very, very good, a darn good writer, as you already know.
Oh, well, you know the thing about Tim that we love is that his accessibility as a human being and a person and a writer, you know, like everybody, you know, he loves being on this show with you guys and talking with y'all. I mean, he knows Lady A, he knows all you know, Mel, he knows you guys, man. And when I called him, I called him like at 3:30. Right now, Doc? I said, no, Tim, calm down. Five o'clock, Tim. This is the first time we were able to get Mark Breland.
Well, you know, thing about them is, Doc, you know, you move very well, Doc. Even now, I don't know if I think Mark has a record. Doc, is it 5 Golden Glove championships in his career?
Yeah, he was the first.
Was 4, he may have 5.
He was the first 5, and he only lost one fight as an amateur.
And that was like 100 and something and 1.
270 and something, I think he was. But the thing about
this, day, I don't know who ended up his only loss. To this day, I have no idea.
I got to find him. No, we'll bring him back. But the thing, Emmanuel Stewart told me that Mark Breland ran the Kronk gym. I mean, he said Mark was beating up on Tommy. He was beating up Helmut Kenty. He was beating up on Mike McCullough. He said Mark ran the Kronk gym. And Mark told me,
that the turning point in his career was the adjustment from amateur to pro. He said it was no fun because, you know, I can't hang out with Mel Smith Jr. because he's with Don King, and I can't hang out with Doc Stanley because he's with Top Rank. You know, all of a sudden now it became a business, and that's when he lost his really zeal. Marion Boykin told him, Mark, you know, come on back. You can dominate the welterweight division. You can dominate the – he said, no, I don't want to do it. And luckily for him, Larry Holmes, the two guys I know, of course, Ali, who are in a financial state of security. But, you know, Mark didn't have to come back and fight. And that's the thing we talked about last night, is the fact that in so many ways, you know, Evander has to come back. Mark said something else funny. He said, you know, Hey, Rooney, he said, Lady A, how do you buy a house with 19 bedrooms and you only got 11 kids? You know, I mean, how do you buy a house with 19 bedrooms? And you got to put all the kids in there. I mean, Evander bought a house with 19 bedrooms. I mean, you know, I mean, you would figure real estate is an investment, but I don't know. And you were there, Lady A.
The same thing happened, if you don't mind me saying.
What?
The same thing happened a long time ago when I met this person in person. Thanks to you. Well, not a former. Yes, I did. Was he was on your show? MC
Ooh.
Hammer. When he first bought that, what is it, $25 million house?
Oh, yeah.
I knew Doc when I first heard it. I'm saying, no, he's going to be part of that dough someday. He didn't really have to buy that big of a...
But you know what, Rooney? They get into this thing of real estate is such a liquid asset, but they don't understand that you have to make sure it's the right adjustment. I mean, how many guys buy a house?
That's like the world bonds. I mean, they got all this real estate.
Exactly.
I mean,
you buy a house
for
25, and you got to sell it for 13. You know what I mean? You know, it's crazy.
That's like the world bonds. They supposedly have all this real estate, what have you, but they don't have any liquid cash flow, and that's why they tied up in real estate.
Well, you know what, Rooney? I think the biggest thing with them. I really think the biggest thing with them is credibility. They lost their credibility off of that scandal. Because there were people who said, you know what, they knew it was a scam, and they still went down with it. They knew there was no credibility, and that's the biggest thing, especially in the game of baseball, where these owners are kind of, you know, they have their own little circles in the club. I think, and the fact that, you know, Rooney, there's so much animosity and envy of New York owners. You got the number one market. You've got a New York City team. I mean, even when the Mets were a bad team, they were drawing $1 million a year, Rooney. They were doing $1 million a year, 62-63.
Plus, you got the TV rights to the biggest market in the country.
That's what I'm talking about. There's envy. So the first chance they get, you know, I mean, Ricky Henderson told me, no matter how bad the Yankees were, when you came into a town, there were still people 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning waiting for Yankee autographs.
You know what I'm going to miss about that, Doc? I'm going to miss the old man because despite what you may or may not have thought of Steinbrenner, the guy wanted to win.
The one thing the guy said about George, you know what? Hey, we got to have Mel Smith Jr., he's going to make the deal to the San Diego Padres to get Mel Smith Jr. Okay, he's going to make the deal, and he had the mindset of George Allen. The future is now. What the Bible says: only a fool can guarantee tomorrow, and today is worth two tomorrows. And one thing about George, maybe he was schizophrenic, maybe he was oversensitive. But the one thing about George, if I got to have Mel Smith Jr., he's going to get it. He got Winnie, he got Dave, you know, whoever was the number one guy, he got Catfish,
That's true.
The number one guy out there, he got him. And the one thing the Yankees players always said, you know what thing about George? You know, we can deal with the microphones in the clubhouse. Just don't say nothing. But he's going to get us he got A-Rod. I mean, you look back at it, he got A-Rod, he got Reggie, he got Winnie, he got Catfish, he got Tartable. Whoever was the number one guy out there, if George thought
don't forget when he made this kind of high-stakes baseball,
the first baseman from Oakland who had all the roids going on.
Giambi.
Yes, Jason Giambi, when he's making a boatload of money.
Once again, Rooney, he always got the number one guy. He got Tex, you know, and then, you know, well, some of the guys through the system, I mean, there was questions about Jeter one time. There was questions about Cano.
By the way, I wasn't thinking of signing Rigetti to that minor league contract. He wants to come back to the Yankees.
Oh, Patty, yeah, I mean, you know what? I've said this, Rooney. I told you this a million times. I never understood this nonsense about, oh, I'm going to retire to spend more time with the family. Are you serious? You don't think the family wants you to make another $15 million next year? Listen, as a baseball player, the kids don't get out of school, Rooney. They don't get out of school till June anyway. As a baseball player, you've got Thanksgiving, Christmas Eve, and New Year's. Those are four biggest holidays. You got them off. You got them
well,
off.
Well, apparently after a year of being home and chilling and watching the kids, he said, okay, I've had enough rest.
But it also shows you the state of pitching in baseball today, that this guy can stay out a year and come back and still be not only a competitive pitcher, but a pitcher on one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. For the Yankees, it's a great deal. One, he draws fans. Two, he's a left-hander. Three, he still can win. And four, they save money. They save money. They just got rid of the guy who went to Pittsburgh, okay? So he's gone. So his contract is out the way. You give Pettit $2.5 million, which in today is – I mean, just think about this, Rooney.
Excuse me, please forgive me for saying it, but can Chuck Mussina be far behind?
I think Chuck didn't do what Pettit did. Chuck has waited too long. Chuck should have not have retired. He had a shot at 300, and where else were you going to make this kind of money and on a very good team and with the greatest closer of all time there? See, that's where he messed up. That's where Chuck Mussina messed up. He shouldn't have retired. He had 200-something wins. He could have played another. The Yankees would have gave him a two-year deal probably. A two-year deal. So if he wins 15 games for 2 years, he had 235. He got 265. You got an outside shot at 300, which means automatic Hall of Fame. I don't understand. I mean, you know, where else are you going to make this kind of money? And a pitcher.
Oh, my God. I guess he's just tired of it.
Rooney, you pitch on Monday, and you don't pitch again till Saturday? My goodness.
Bless you, Doc, but you know better than anybody. You know you got to travel in the hotels every night, you know.
But, Rooney, you know what? Baseball is so sweet because, you know, it's not like basketball. We play the Knicks tonight in New York City. We catch a bus down to Philly, and we play Philly the next day. Okay? Then maybe we'll fly out to Phoenix. Rooney, baseball, you're in town 3 days. When you come in town, you're locked in, Rooney. You know, when I come in town to New York, I say, Dad, let me give Mel Smith from Lady Ada a call. We can go to dinner. It's not like basketball. You know, you play a game today. You're in Philly tomorrow.
Right. Then you go to Phoenix. Then you go to Dallas.
Yeah. I mean, but Rooney, I'll be in Dallas. I'm be a Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Monday, Tuesday. You got 3 days. And now you do a Monday night game, a Tuesday night game. You do a day game on Wednesday. So whatever town you have to be in, when you fly out on Wednesday, you're in Chicago Wednesday night. Okay, you play a night game Thursday, a night game Friday, a day game Saturday, and a day game Sunday. I mean, you can't beat it. And every inning you come out.
I heard that after all this time. I was kind of surprised. Pardon me for stepping on you.
No, I heard this,
and I couldn't believe it after all this time. I was watching Reggie Miller, I think, during the NBA games on the Dish Network, and he said even now, Doc, when he's doing like in New York, that he kind of stays in his hotel room because he was really like public enemy number one, even way past his playing days.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, people would recognize him and just mercy all over him.
Who's that, Doc?
Yeah, go ahead, Winnie. Go ahead, Winnie.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard you. My name. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Doc, you have to say that I'm telling a lot.
Reggie Miller, Public Enemy number one. I know him in Spike.
I mean, Doc, would you believe that one day, that back in the paper, they had a thing with Spike basically saying, be quiet, Jenna Reason, that those threes, like in the last minute, beat us in that playoff game. We just controlled down the stretch and about 4 or 5 threes in about 40 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, I have those sneakers. In the Sports Net Hall of Fame, I got those sneakers.
Really?
Because him and Mark Jackson were very close. Hold on. Yeah, him and Mark Jackson. Yeah, I was surprised at the relationships between players. Mark Jackson was close with Reggie, Moses Malone. Now Oakley and Michael Jordan are like brothers. Every game, Rooney, whenever Mike came to town, Oakley had the sneakers because I remember I would ask Mike. I said, Mike, can I get the sneakers? And we got to the point, he said, hey, man, you know O got the sneakers. Because the last pair I got, Mike gave me a pair when my son had a car accident. He gave them to my son. That was the first time Mike had ever had did a triple-double in a playoff game. And then Mike gave me a pair out in Jersey. And the last pair, Mike had a triple-double in Game 5, where Knicks won the first two games, Chicago won the second two games, and then Chicago won the third game here. Game 5, I see the ball boy taking the sneakers down to the locker room. And because Oak was like Walt Frazier. Me and Oak would leave the locker room together. You know, Oak was the last guy to leave like Frazier used to be. Me, him, and his man Harry Robson, the great statistician and the legendary Clyde Frazier. And as we would, and the ball boy, I see him now. He's got another position, and he brought the sneakers to him. And I said, Oak, can I have those? He said, nah, man. He said, don't worry. There'll be a Game 7. I'll give you the sneakers from Game 7. So I said, okay. No, yeah, I'll let it go. So me and Oak were talking a while, and Oak said, you know what? Take those. As it turned out, there was no Game 7. Chicago won Game 6, and that was the pair.
And that was it. Yeah.
Yeah, and Mike's only had 2 games where he had triple-double in the playoffs, and I have both of those sneakers in the Sports and Depth Trust and God Hall of Fame. And but him and Oakley were like brothers, just like Reggie was tight with Mark. Mark was tight with Moses Malone. The old Knicks, you know, Walt Frazier always left by himself. Clyde left by himself. I think, Clyde left by himself. The Busher would be his wife. Bradley, I believe Bradley and Jackson were kind of tight. But for sure, I knew Dean Memminger and Earl Monroe were tight.
From Marquette,
they were tight. They were tight, so they would always leave together. You know what I mean? And but I was just surprised at a lot of the relationships of players on other teams. You know what I mean? The thing with Reggie and Mark, thing with Mark and Moses. Moses was funny. I forgot that. Eddie Lee Wilkins. We're coming out the chapter.
I remember Eddie Lee. He hurt his knee like after his first games with the Knicks. Hurt himself.
Yeah, Rooney, we're coming out the chapel. Eddie Lee is in street clothes in a cast. We're walking past the Milwaukee, the dressing room, and Moses Malone looks out at Eddie Lee and he says, hey, Rooney, he says, Eddie Lee, now understand, Rooney, Eddie Lee is in street clothes in a cast, and Moses said, seriously, hey, man, you playing tonight? And we all just cracked up.
That's cold.
Everybody just cracked up, man. You know, me, Mark, Harper. Because those guys, that was the thing. Those guys would all go down to the chapel. Starks, Mark.
That's my guy, Starkey.
What you call him? Derek Harper.
Charlie Ward.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, actually, won the Heisman in football, didn't he?
Well, he's the only Heisman Trophy winner to play in the NBA. And
yeah,
I got a couple of pair of his sneakers in the
in the Hall of Fame. It's amazing
that. And I remember
that
you and Marion being on FAN, and to this day, it was you and Marion who brought up the point. Guy wins the Heisman. Sure, he's supposed to be a bit smallish for a quarterback, what, 6 feet or so? Whatever.
You know what, but Rooney, here's
the
thing, Rooney. How do you be the number one player
in the country and not get drafted?
And nobody draft you. Only if you're black. Yeah,
it's, said that on the fan.
You know, I mean, it's amazing. He's the number one player on the number one team in college football, and they told him from the jump. Hey, look, it's like the Mets when the Mets told Reggie Jackson, "Hey, we ain't drafting you because your wife is white." His wife wasn't white. I mean, the same thing with Vic Power. For all intents and purposes, he was going to be the first black player on the Yankees, but they thought Vic Power's white wife, because we say in Spanish, Blanquita. They thought she was a Blanquita, but she was a light skinned Cuban.
I started bringing this up on your show.
We'll do it next week. What?
The Jets had a running back. Now, when you say, oh, shit, yes, they did. The Jets had a running back named Dwayne Crutchfield.
Wow.
Way back in the day, named Dwayne Crutchfield. I think he was the second running back up to, who's the guy? Damn good running back on the Jets, too. And I can't think of him. But anyway, there was a rumor that he'd show up at, you know, that he'd have a white girl waiting for him at the gate or whatnot, or whatever the case may be, and that they didn't like really the association.
Okay, listen. You're thinking about, yeah. They just put him into the Hall of Fame, too. I can't think of it. I'm looking at his spikes here, too. God, though, number 24. I know who you're talking about. God, though, what a great brother.
Largest ball player.
Yeah, I'm looking at his spikes. Rooney, we got to go because somebody's going to come on here at
7:30. Well, that's right. Hey, Doc, thanks again for another chance. But at first, I'm like, Doc, I got all these guys. I'm never going to be in with you with all these big names.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it, Doc, more than you know.
You're an integral part of Sports Nation, baby. I'll talk to you later, Rooney.
A pleasure. Thanks again, Doc.
Thanks, baby. Love you.
Talk to you soon. Have a good night.